This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Oh, Frederick, are you all right?
Yes. Would you excuse me for 1 minute, dear?
Oh, of course, Doctor.
Igor? May I speak to you for a moment?
Of course.
Sit down, won't you?
Thank you.
No, no, up here.
Oh, thank you.
Now, that brain that you gave me, was it Hans Delbruck's?
No.
Ah, good. Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in?
And you won't be angry?
I will not be angry.
Abby someone.
Abby who?
Abby Normal.
Abby Normal.
I'm almost sure that was the name.
Are you saying that I put an abnormal brain into a 7.5 foot long, 54 inch wide gorilla?
What?
Is that what you're telling me? Quick, quick, get him up!
What? Squeeze in the boot, yes?
I wonder who that could be at this hour.
It is 27 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of December, the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for coming by. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's Thursday, and welcome to day 12. Draw near, that ye might be amused. It's 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be a part of today's program. And why wouldn't you? All things considered, all things being equal, really, when you weigh the ups, the downs, the pros, the cons, everywhere in between, why would you not choose to be part of this extravaganza? The only possible excuse is that you're a fool. And you're not a fool, are you?
Well, obviously, they're listening.
That's what I'm saying.
They would not be hearing you say that, so therefore you, who are listening now, are not a fool.
So there we go. So we figured it all out. So there's no excuse. You can also engage with us via electronic means, if you like. That is rick at rickemerson.com for email. Rick at rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be emailed. It's D-A-W-N, Dawn at rickemerson.com. The text box on the website is open. And you can also text us via Skype, if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show is our username there. Rick Emerson Show at Skype. Let's just take a moment to acknowledge two things. One, wait, hold on. Before we do that, let's take a pre-moment. Let's take an overture moment. All right, there we go. Phone on. Yeah, there we go. Awesome. All right. You know, I think Skype is based in Sweden. And I think that one of the things about Skype is I think I could actually just phone Sweden right now if I wanted to.
You can't call China, though.
Is that true?
China just blocked Skype.
Is it because of the repression and the whatnot?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Well, in any event, that ruins our whole third segment for today. This should take a moment to acknowledge two things, though. One is how freaking genius Marty Feldman was. I mean,
yeah.
And it's not just because of those weird bug eyes of his, that is part of it. He kind of looked like that all the time, too, didn't he?
He had an eye thing that caused his eyes to actually be like that.
I know, I feel like a dick. Was it actually some sort of...
No, it's some kind of a...
Hold on, let's just, before we... What's going on? Is this more of your business that you can't open the VSO bottle?
The VSO bottles, the caps are really, really tight.
Is this, I know we've had this conversation off the air, I forget if we talked about it on the show or not. Is this like one of those things where you go to open like a can of Pepsi or something, and it's like, and you feel, I don't know if this happens more to men or to women, because women, you can get the, you can get like the fingernail extensions or whatever.
Yeah.
You go to open the can of soda and you feel like you're going to snap your fingernails off.
Yeah.
And then you say to yourself, but by God, I'm only like 30 something, or I'm 40, or I'm whatever. What's it going to be like when I'm 80? And then you envision yourself just sitting there in the apartment after a snowstorm or perhaps the zombie apocalypse, and you've got a can of Dinty Moore beef stew and you're trying to open it to stave off starvation. And it's like you can't quite get it done. Not because you don't have the food, not because you're not hungry, not because you're not motivated, just because your feeble old person fingers can't open the lid.
I actually feel a little bit resentful. I forget about the VSO bottle. Every time I go to open it, I will have forgotten. And then I go to open it, and then I'm just angry at the VSO guy because these new bottles, I like the bottles. I like the size of the bottle. I like the VSO in the bottle.
If only you could get to it.
Yeah. I mean, here, try and open this.
All right. Now, is this frozen or anything?
No, it's just... Okay, well...
There you go.
Yeah, I loosened it for you. But that was, you know, pretty tight, wasn't it?
It's called having a Y chromosome, Don.
There you go. All right.
By the way, can I just tell you that that's a thing that never gets old, because my wife does the same thing. She'll be at home and she'll be trying to open a bottle of, like, you know, sauerkraut or whatever, something around the house. You know, can you open this bottle of sauce or whatever? And then she'll complain about how tough it is and how it can't be opened and how it's impossible to open and how she must have gotten the defective bottle, or maybe it's all of the humidity in the air. And meanwhile, I just kind of go... Well, and yeah. I just hand it back to her.
And tell the truth. No matter how tightly the thing is actually on there,
I would pretend that it was easy.
You pretend it's easy.
That's the thing. And here's the other thing is I never let her see me do this. But sometimes, you know, it's like I'll do that thing of hitting the lid with a knife or running it under the water. But I make sure that she's out of the room when that happens, so it just looks like my sort of vibrant masculinity. You know, my virility is such that I can open those without any problem.
Thankfully, Patrick doesn't do that. I will have trouble opening something. I'll say, could you open this for me? And if it is really, really on there, really, really tight, he will actually start up and then just go, Jesus Christ! And he doesn't have any problem with, like, just going, God, you're right, that was... But, of course, if it wasn't that tight, he just kind of looks at me, like, sadly.
Of course, in retrospect, this is probably because his body was just falling apart.
That's true.
I can't seem to open it or breathe.
Because his gallbladder was going bad, so he couldn't open anything anyway.
No, and I always do. No matter how difficult it was, and not only do I not acknowledge that the lid was hard to open, but then I just sort of kind of do like a little, there we go. There you go, little lady. And you get with the dinner making now. I'm going to be in the office doing manly things. So let's back on Marty Feldman for a second, who was Igor in Young Frankenstein, and he was also in, he was in High Anxiety, and he was in, God, the hell was that movie where he played the nun? No, the nun, the monk. He played the guy who left the monastery and then went into San Francisco. But did he have some sort of a thing where his eyes were just like falling out of his head, like he had some sort of physical ailment?
Yeah.
Oh, see, now I feel like a terrible person for just finding comic value in that all my life.
I mean, obviously he played that for comic value himself.
I guess you don't really have many choices. Like if your face looks like that, it's not. I guess modeling is probably out of the question. It's not like you're really going to be able to be, and probably ophthalmology is not going to be a thing you excel at either.
Possibly not, though.
So Marty Feldman is fantastic. Let's also take a moment to acknowledge how scorchingly hot Terry Garr is in Young Frankenstein. Seriously, and I'm a Terry Garr fan, and I know that she's got as we sometimes say, the cruel hand of time comes for us all, so nobody stays young forever, but I got to say that you look back at Terry Garr specifically in Young Frankenstein, and it's not like she was unattractive in other films. You know, even when she was doing like the power suit thing in Mr. Mom, she was hot, but there is just something about, and I think this sounds like an insult, but it's not. There's something very flattering about black and white as well. Mm. You get if you get somebody who really knows what they're doing and they light it and they shade it in such a way that it doesn't look, you know, that it doesn't look cheap, you know, and in Young Frankenstein, they've really got, I mean, they went all out to make it look like those old, the Universal horror films and the RKO movies. She is just like white hot. She's blindingly hot in that movie. Every time I see it, it sort of takes my breath away. Not unlike when I see Shirley Jones in The Music Man, where it's extra, because I think she's actually a librarian in that film. So you got that going on
Marion,
as well.
Marion the Librarian.
Is that her name?
Yes, because there's a song about Marion the Librarian.
Here's the thing about The Music Man is I've really only ever seen it once. I saw The Music Man once, and it was because I didn't actually know I knew the reference, but I did not know the point of derivation for, you know, there's trouble right here in River City.
Ah.
Something that stands for darts or whatever.
The movie of The Music Man is awesome. Robert Preston is just brilliant. It's like one of when you hear people say that phrase about the role he was born to play, it's
right.
Like that was just brilliant. It's like that and Victor Victoria, he was never better served than those two movies. And then young Ron Howard. As the kid who singing the Gary Indiana song with the lisp.
That's right. Yeah, and one weekend I watched The Music Man and The Pajama Game, and
which is not a particularly good musical.
You know, goddamn it! You know, here's the thing. That's one of Lars' favorite movies. Lars just cannot. Can I just tell you how many songs from The Pajama Game I did not know 15 years ago, and that I now know by heart? Because 7.5 cents doesn't mean a heck of a lot. 7.5 cents doesn't mean a thing.
You know, The Pajama Game and How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying may have been like huge hits on Broadway, and God bless them, they might be awesome to watch in a theater. Not good movies.
Here's one thing that was great about seeing The Pajama Game. It was an unanticipated point of reference for both of us. It's when I went to see DJ Z Trip a couple years ago at the Roseland, and Lara went along. And about halfway through his set, where he's just, you know, he's like cutting together all this rock and hip hop and whatever. And I don't know, it was like maybe 35, 40 minutes into his set, and he suddenly just went to Hernando's Hideaway from The Pajama. And it was a moment where it was like a Venn diagram. It was a chocolate and peanut butter moment for the two of us. So for that reason alone, and that's Doris Day, right?
Yeah.
In The Pajama Game.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in any event, let's make a no more pajama game discussion rule on the show.
Okay.
And institute it now.
Okay.
Coming up today, Joy of Christmas, as we prepare to head into New Year's Eve. That is tomorrow. So we're wrapping up the year by getting our Joy of Christmas stories put into a pile and done so we can start fresh January 1st. Joy of Christmas coming up. Corpse Watch coming up today. We'll have the top five as well. Top five songs that reference Superman. As the top five songs about Superman in the sense that they at least reference him or use him as some sort of point of comparison during the lyrics. We got that. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Thursday.
A man calls police over the freshness of his French fries. The Top Gear guys are in trouble for wearing burkas, and folks be loving Bon Jovi.
The Top Gear guys?
The Top Gear guys.
I was going to ask if it was the guys in the British or the American version, but I guess the American version is already gone.
Yeah. Now, Jeremy Clarkson and his cohorts.
Hey, did they ever figure out what's his name, the Stig? There was a whole thing where they were trying to figure out his identity.
Yeah.
And then about every 2.5 weeks on Dig or, like, Fark or someplace, they'll have some story from like, the Sun or the Mirror where they claim to have discovered his identity, you know, from, like... like some credit card receipt or something, or like,
no,
you know, like the way the sun angles off his helmet.
Well, I think the guy actually acknowledged it was him recently. He's a writer for some.
So it was a thing that they did discover.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, okay. Because it's like that to me is sort of like the Jack the Ripper thing, where you, like with you know like pretty I would say biannual frequency, some special will air on Discovery or a book will come out where they claim to have definitively solved the identity of Jack the Ripper, but then you realize that they just don't know what the hell they're talking about.
No.
It's like all those books claiming to know who Deep Throat it was, all of which were wrong. So all that's coming up. Joy of Christmas today, Corpse Watch, Top 5 Songs About Superman, those headlines. Don't forget, tomorrow, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here. We'll have our year-end installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Tomorrow, talking about the life, legend, career, work, legacy of Mr. George Carlin. By the way, a little tip from Rick Emerson to you all. Here's something you ought to be doing at night if you are taking, because we have this huge-ass bottle of Advil that we keep here in the studio because we're just plagued by pain and physical failure all the time. It's like our bodies are just sort of disintegrating out from underneath us. So we have this giant bottle of Advil, and the bottle of Advil we have here, not unlike the laptops that we have here, were originally at my home. And then when I needed something, I just immediately just started rifling through a mental inventory of my own possessions and brought the laptops from home. And when we ran out of Advil the other day, I didn't go to the store. I just hit the medicine cabinet in my house and brought it in here. So it was, but I keep forgetting to go to the store and buy more Advil. So then when evening comes and I need to take some sort of a pain reliever, I don't have any Advil. So I have to go to this bottle of aspirin that I've got in the medicine cabinet. And the bottle of aspirin I've got in the medicine cabinet is, in fact, three different bottles of aspirin that were consolidated by my wife when she was cleaning the bathroom recently. She was going through our medicine cabinet. She was getting rid of a bunch of junk we don't use anymore. And there were three different types of aspirin that I think we had accumulated on... I don't know, like we got one bottle on a trip and got one bottle for like camping and one bottle for something else. So she consolidated them all down. But here's the thing about it is, and you can't tell them apart by looking at them, but one of the aspirin varieties that we had purchased also contains some, like, a vast amount of caffeine for reasons were never really sufficiently explained. I think it's because caffeine is good for getting rid of certain kinds of headaches.
Yeah.
But it's not really good for curing anything else. So whenever I take aspirin now, I always stop and I look at the bottle trying to figure out which aspirin is which, and then I realize there's not going to be telling any apart, and so I'll take my requisite 10 or 15 tablets, and then I find out later on whether or not I've ingested all of the aspirin tablets that are full of caffeine, as I did last night. So I was taking it right before I went to bed, and it's a lot, too. I mean, it's like 100 milligrams or something of caffeine, which is like a cup of coffee. So I think I had about 700 milligrams of caffeine before I went to bed last night. And I just sat there staring at the ceiling, becoming increasingly cranky at nothing and no one. Just sitting there in the deepening gloom of my bedroom, just grinding my teeth and gnashing and becoming angry at. And then it's that weird, and then it's the cyclical.
Railing against your own brain for not shutting up.
And then it becomes like the self-perpetuating thing. Which is exacerbated, of course, by all the caffeine I've just ingested right before bed. So I just threw the whole thing out this morning, the whole bottle, so I got to start from scratch. But then it's that thing where you become angry at yourself because you can't fall asleep. And then your anger at sleep just wakes you up. And then you feel like you're stuck in that weird Woody Woodpecker cartoon where he's trying to fall asleep and he just can't. And he ends up hacking up his entire bedroom with an axe. So anyway, so just I'm just saying, like a little word of the wise from me to you. You might want to be checking out the bottle. And it seems like that's a thing that they ought to put in larger letters.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't say in the front, contains caffeine. I only knew because I happened to be, I didn't even know
you could get those because I know that I fell off a horse when I was about 13 and there was some over-the-counter pill. You could still get codeine over-the-counter then. And they gave me something that was like codeine, Tylenol and caffeine all in one pill. And that stuff was awesome.
Yeah.
That stuff was amazing because it's like, apparently, because caffeine is a vasodilator or vasorestrictor, and it helps with headaches because, you know, it helps make all your blood vessels smaller so your head isn't pounding as bad. And that stuff was great.
It's really good for migraines, I guess. It's a thing that, you know, migraines are like cluster headaches and light-sensitive headaches. But if they had put like a sort of starburst thing on the front or something that said contains a whole lot of caffeine, that would have been really helpful. As a result, it's just, so it's all mixed in together. And you know how it pains me to throw anything away because I'm such a big cheapskate. And so it was just like the greatest reluctance that I took this large jar of aspirin and threw, which, and here's the other thing, is that as great a drug as aspirin really is, and it really is, you know, as Bayer says, it really is a wonder drug. It's a pretty amazing substance, but it's also not that good a pain reliever. I mean, it works, but it doesn't. Yeah. But it's not like a heavy duty pain reliever. So I end up taking way more than I should. And then I just sit there at night because, of course, I'm not falling asleep because of all the goddamn caffeine I've ingested. So I'm thinking about how my blood is thinning out and how I'm probably eating holes in my stomach lining. So in any event, so that was my night. And then it's that thing where the longer you stay awake at night, and there's got to be some sort of clinical explanation for this. There's got to be some scientific basis for things becoming infinitely. If people are really sleep deprived or really stoned, things become more interesting. There's something about if you are laying awake in bed at night, late in the evening, things become one of two things: more depressing, or they become more terrifying. So it's like if you're trying to sleep and it's 3:15 and you're staring at the blank wall and you start thinking about like some puppy that followed you home when you were like five and your parents wouldn't let you keep it and suddenly the saddest thing you could remember and you just find yourself dissolving into puddles of tears. Or last night, as I'm sitting there laying awake, unable to sleep, grinding my teeth, and then I start thinking about the Christmas tree in the living room, which is great. But, you know, it's not like you really remember to water it a lot after Christmas. Like, once Christmas has come and gone, the whole thing about, I got to get underneath there and make sure it's got a lot of, life-giving and life-sustaining water so that it stays fresh and green and smells wonderful, but also so it doesn't, burst into flames and render my home, into a pile of ashes. So I started thinking about the Christmas tree last night. Then I started thinking about the Christmas tree that's, like, here in the kitchen at the office, which I don't think I have watered since Christmas. Mm. And again, we should say, by the way, just as a little post-holiday shout-out to Christmas Mountain Trees, to the tree, still green, still, it's not dry. The things are still, they still have a lot of give and snap and life to them. Still smells great.
Yeah, my tree at home, which never got any ornaments put on it, so it's just still a tree. But Patrick and I were just talking about that last night. We've only watered it, three or four times since we got it. It's like,
but it's
still
springy and yielding and soft.
There's almost nothing on the floor underneath of it. Everything, I mean, it's almost like an artificial tree. Everything, the needles are still so tight and everything's so,
And it smells fantastic.
And it smells great. No, it's the most amazing. And I'm not just saying this because they were a sponsor.
It really
is
the
most amazing Christmas tree I've ever had.
But at some point, it's like... But at some point, the thing just, it does dry out, if for no other reason than, again, we're forgetting to water it now that the holidays are done.
Well, I was doing that when Patrick was in the hospital, and I was home alone, and I was stressing out over everything, and I was trying to sleep, and I remember my brain going to that, because the dog would, like, try to get into bed with me, or would sit right outside the bedroom door, like, scratching or something, going, ching, 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 with her collar. So I shut the bedroom door, and then I was laying there trying to get to sleep, and then I heard something that sounded like kind of a snappy crackle sound, which was probably the dog just chewing on something. But then my brain, I'm thinking, it's like 2 in the morning, I'm thinking, oh God, what if the bedroom's door's closed and I'm alone, and what if, like, there was a fire? And if, like, the tree caught on fire, and I wouldn't even know there was a fire because I'm in here and the bedroom door is closed. And then I'm thinking, but the dog would probably start barking if, like, something was on fire. Dog would start barking.
Unless the smoke killed it first.
And that was the next thing. I thought, unless the dog is dead from the smoke. And then I'm just trying to figure out, should I open the door? Should I not open the... And then I'm just like, Jesus Christ.
And that's my thing, too. I have actually got... Here's the other thing that I will worry about. And it's always fires for some reason. I never worry about occasionally a guy kicking in the door with a shotgun, but usually fires. The thing that I will actually worry about is not just the fire itself and the destruction of the house and presumed danger to my person and to those I care about. Then I just start wondering, like, is my renter's insurance up to date? Oh, God. I've actually gotten up, just like I have on occasion, gone home to check to see if the iron was left on. Which it was not today. I have to think. But I've actually gotten up and I've rooted around in the filing cabinet in my basement to find my insurance forms, to see if my renter's insurance... Which, like, it seems like while I'm up, I could just make sure that, like, whatever I'm worried about catching the house on fire is just off. And then I could go back to bed and check the rest of it in the morning. But no, I don't do that. So I have to be looking around for my thing from, like, Prudential or something in the basement to make sure that, you know, that I'll be able to replace my, you know, my Twisted Sister discography if something should happen to the house. So that's how I spent my evening last night, just staring at it and just wondering, like, if I would smell the smoke before it actually rendered me unconscious, you know, or if it would just be one of those things where I would. And then you start thinking, well, if the smoke, I should point out at this juncture again that, you know, the tree is in no danger of setting anything on fire. But of course, that's why you have a smoke detector in your house, because you just never know what in your house.
Yeah.
It's like we talk about Squire's Electric a lot, too. You just never know what in your house is sort of, you know, is at the end of its safe period. But then you start thinking about, okay, well, if I'm in bed and then there is some sort of a fire, and if the smoke does render me unconscious, will that then make it a peaceful death? Or will I be unconscious just long enough for the fire to become so large I can't put it out, but then I'll be woken up in time to die an excruciating, horrible death at the end? You know, and it's like, and there's really no way to, I mean, I guess there probably is an answer, but not an answer. Unless I go Google it, I'm not going to be able to figure it out. It's just there to keep me from falling asleep at like 3:30 in the morning. So, so that was my evening. That was really all, that's all I remember from last night. I'm sure I did other things. I think I folded laundry at some point because I'm a thrill a minute. But that really is the extent of it. It's like the aspirin and the accidental caffeine ingestion followed by laying awake and wondering if I was going to be flambéed by the time morning rolled around. So there you go. Bam.
Nice.
Zing.
I spent my evening serial killer obsessing. Just as a little background, I spent about 10 years as a film critic, I'm still on a number of publicists' lists, and I will get these odd emails every once in a while. And I ended up on this publicity list for this movie, Dear Mr. Gacy. And so for like the better part of a year, while they were making this movie, I kept getting all these emails about stuff was going on, and we've just updated our sites with some of the actual letters that this guy wrote to Gacy. And so I knew all about this movie way before it was actually released. And it's based on a book. It's based on a real story. Guy was like 18 years old.
The guy corresponded with Gacy?
Yeah, he was a college freshman taking a criminology course, and he started writing to Gacy and basically didn't tell him he was taking a criminology course. Basically said, I'm 18 years old.
I'm
and
your
I'm,
biggest fan.
I'm a hot boy.
Yeah.
And I'd sure like to talk to you. And like sent him sexy pictures of himself and that sort of thing and sort of lured Gacy into this friendship.
If this is the same book I'm thinking of, so I've read this. I read it when it came out, which was a few years ago. And it was, and he eventually visited him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, I've never seen Now, I'm trying to think if I have seen the movie or not, because describing this, and I think you mentioned the other day that you were talking about this, you would seen it, you were going to see it, and it's, and I, And I was trying to think of whether I have actually seen this movie or whether I just saw an extended trailer for it. All I remember, it just looked terrible.
Well, it looked terrible, and that's why I put off watching it for a really long time. But I was curious.
Was there just nothing else in the house?
Pretty much,
you're just looking through your DVD collection.
And also, I was curious, and I'm a bit of a serial killer freak. And William Forsythe plays Gacy, and I like William Forsythe, and I thought that was interesting casting. He has kind of a vague physical resemblance to Gacy, and he's a really good actor. So I thought maybe there's something there. And I started watching it, and for about the first third of it, it actually wasn't terrible. I mean, it wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. It was actually very interesting, the whole idea that this guy was basically putting one over on Gacy by positioning himself as a potential victim to the serial killer who's in prison.
I'm just your type.
Well, and he did all of this research on Gacy to find out stuff about Gacy's relationship with his father. He had an abusive, angry father. So he would write these letters saying, yeah, my dad keeps just beating my ass and I don't know what to do about it, because he knew Gacy would sympathize with that. And so, and then taking sexy pictures of himself. And so all of that was actually really, really interesting. It's just then it just devolved into nonsense about two-thirds of the way through. And then there's this really ridiculous sort of ending where he goes and visits Gacy. And he is actually in physical danger from Gacy at one point while they are alone together. And I just, all I could
it
do...
It seems unlikely.
I found myself wondering how accurate that actually was. Because it was actually interesting in the point that he... In the film, anyway, he spoke to the people at the prison and said, I'd like to come visit Gacy. How safe will I be? And they said, you'll be in two separate rooms. There'll be a glass partition between you. You'll be surrounded by guards. It's fine. Then when he shows up, they just put him in a room with Gacy and the guards leave.
At a card table.
And he's going, whoa, dudes, hey. And the guards are like, have fun. And they just walk off and leave him there.
Have fun, freak. Enjoy your interview.
Yeah. And so that was actually interesting. But then when Gacy actually, is... physically assaulting him. I'm just going, really?
Yeah.
Really, movie?
Well, the thing about that, the book was sort of poorly written. It was like a great premise that you wanted to be much better than it was. You're like, what a great idea for a book. Ooh, that doesn't pan out very well. Which is, and that is the thing where, that is the thing where the guy just had the premise and he wrote it down on a matchbook.
It was autobiographical. It actually happened to the guy. And apparently maybe he needed a professional writer to help ghost it for him so that it was written decently.
That is just a thing where an agent just saw the two-word description and went, awesome, genius, I can get you five figures or whatever. And then the guy actually had to write it at some point and just didn't, and there was nothing. And I think the guy actually just offed himself a couple weeks ago. The guy who wrote that book. Because he was obviously effed in some deep way.
Yeah.
So there you go. Well, that's a big up.
But the kid, the acting was actually pretty good. And it kept bothering me. I couldn't figure out who the kid was, and realized that the guy who's playing the main guy, he's been in a whole lot of movies. He was in one of the Final Destination movies. He was in Ginger Snaps, which is one of my favorite horror movies ever. And but he's one of these guys, and his name, weirdly enough, his name is Jesse Moss. And the character he's playing, the guy, is Jason Moss. So I was looking him up online to find out if he was actually related to the guy or something. And he's not. That was just one of those weird things of casting that was very strange.
Hey, speaking of serial killers, have you watched a show called Blood on the Wire?
I have. I've watched some of it. It's one of those shows that I feel like I ought to start at the beginning and really work my way through. I never got really into it, but I did watch some of it.
It's one of those things that the audience is pushing me to watch because I finished. I'm almost done with House, and so I've had several. Cheryl is recommending that I watch Jekyll, which I've got. I just haven't watched it yet. And Blood in the Wire, not to be confused with The Wire, but Blood in the Wire, which is a BBC series about the search for a serial killer. I know it streams on Netflix, and it's also. And I think you can just rent it from them as well. I'm just trying to weigh what is next. But that's a thing. It's on my list. It's on my short list.
Speaking of Netflix, I did have something I wanted to ask you about.
Do you remember liking the show though?
I liked it. It was. It was one of the things I wasn't quite in the mood for it. But I think with the really intense British dramas, stuff like Luther, I kind of have to be in a certain mindset to be able to get into them. And when I am in that mindset, I love them passionately, but a lot of times my brain just isn't there.
Well, it also helps that if you're in that mindset, you can get the entire series watched while, before your mood changes. With Luther, I think, which was only six episodes long or something, I think that's a British season is six episodes. Because Blood in the Wire, I think, Or Wire in the Blood. Is it Blood on the Wire or Wire in the Blood?
Wire in the Blood.
Wire in the Blood. So it's, I think it's five seasons, but it's only like 30 episodes or something. So
if you haven't seen the three episodes, the three two-hour Sherlock BBC thing.
Yeah, you've mentioned
you
that.
You really should watch that. They're from Stephen Moffat.
It's like a modern-day
new Doctor Who. And not modern-day. And it sounds kind of lame, but it's really good. And it's interesting because you're watching House. And to me, it was interesting because it seems to me that because the House relationship of Wilson and House is based on Holmes and Watson.
Right.
And then, honestly, it's almost like this rethinking of Sherlock Holmes, the Sherlock show, which each episode is based on a Sherlock Holmes story, but it's all updated for modern times. And it's almost like it feels as if this couldn't have existed without House.
Well, that's how I felt about the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movie. When I was watching that, when I was watching Holmes for the Holidays, I was watching that, and I was watching the interaction, and I was watching listening to the dialogue and the way back and forth, and I thought, well, this sounds very familiar. I've seen this dynamic before. So it was really weird. It was almost like it was like that whole thing. It was like the Flintstones Honeymooners thing, where you had like when the Flintstones movies were coming out, where you had a movie based on a cartoon, based on a sitcom, based on a comic strip.
Yeah.
That's how I felt about the Downey Jr. thing. So it seems like it's probably one has influenced the other. Now it's echoing back at itself.
But it's really smart and really good. Whoever the guy is who plays Holmes, his name is like Jeremy Bandersnatch or something. He has some kind of really insane name. And then Watson is the fellow who played Tim on the British Office.
Oh, right. I dig that guy.
And he's it's really good.
Awesome. All right.
So, but the Netflix thing, I did want to ask you. My friend Eric D. Snyder gifted me yesterday. He just got like a Blu-ray player, so he didn't need this thing. It's apparently some device. It's a box with some plugs, and ostensibly you plug it into your TV and it allows you to watch Netflix on your TV. It's called like a Roku.
Oh yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I haven't tried it yet. I just keep looking at it and I can't conceive of how it actually works.
It depends on, because that is the name to a family of devices, or at least was at one point. It was sort of like like Creative had a thing called a Zen, and the Zen was actually a whole family of MP3 players and MP3/video players. Greg and I, he still does, but Greg and I both used the Creative Zen, and the Roku was the same thing, where it was, I believe it started as an MP3 player, then it became an MP3 and video player. And then I think they started making different devices. The company started making different devices with the same name that did different things. So if this is the same thing I'm thinking of, though, it functions as an interface between Netflix. It is a Netflix-dedicated device that streams the content directly to your television. Which you could just do with your iPhone, though.
I guess, but I just don't understand it because it has... It's just a box.
It's like Apple TV.
And it has plugs between the TV and the box.
Right.
But it doesn't connect to my TV.
Well,
it probably
connects to your Wi-Fi,
yeah,
though.
So,
yeah, that would be my guess. My guess is it's like Apple TV. Because Apple TV has, has its own sort of proprietary network connection.
Or controls or anything. So do I just pull up Netflix on my laptop?
You realize I don't own the device and I've never seen
it. Oh, okay. It just doesn't make any sense because I just keep going, but how do you make it go there?
Are you sure he gave you everything?
I don't know.
Is this like that thing where there was five boxes and he gave you one of them, but it's like he left the crucial? Like, for example, the TiVo people are really savvy about this because especially the first generation TiVo, which, by the way, I gave them let me just say this about TiVo, gave that first generation box, which I got in 2000, now over a decade ago. I got it, gave it to my mom. She's still using it, still works flawlessly. That first generation TiVo, which they say you should only expect to work for 3 to 5 years, which I think is sort of a bit of ass covering. That thing has been working for going in 11 years and it's never had a problem. Never had one issue. Continues to work flawlessly day in and day out. God damn, the TiVo is just, it is, as Michael Powell said, it is God's own machine. If you don't have... if you don't have the remote control, though, to that first generation of TiVo, you are screwed. Because every generation of TiVo that came after that, like the one I have at home now, it actually has like a little, like a toggle switch on the front that, you know, you can press in for enter and you can move it up and down. You know, it's basically like a thumb toggle. So if you lose the remote, you're still kind of effed, but you can puzzle your way through how to work stuff. That first TiVo, if you don't have the remote control, because the front of it, they were going for this sleek sort of, they were going for the Apple kind of look, where it was a single red light.
That's the kind I had.
And the logo, and that was it. If you didn't have the remote, you were effed. There was nothing you could do. And you know what a new remote control cost at the time? $65. You know how I know that? Lost the remote control. Had to go to the store. Had to buy a new one. $65 that thing cost me. And then, of course, then not only did they get the $65 out of me, they screwed me for a second $65 because I was then so terrified. Because by then, it's like I was so wholly dependent upon the TiVo for my television viewing. I mean, there was no way I could go back to watching commercials. So once I lost the remote, not only did I buy a replacement remote, I bought a replacement for the replacement, like preemptively, and just kept it locked in like a sealed crate in my office, just in case I should ever lose the other remote, because it's like there was nothing you could do. I mean, it was like you were effed until the other thing came. And I knew that I would lose it like over a holiday weekend or something when there would be no way that they could get it to me. And I would just sit there and stare at my TV and cry to myself. So that might be with the thing with the Roku. There might be like a remote control device or something that he hasn't given you.
I guess. I asked him, is this it? He's like, oh, yeah, you just plug it in. And I'm like, okay, I guess. So I guess I'll find that out, like, tonight.
And I take it back, by the way, your iPhone will not stream to your television, your Netflix. So if you can find a way to make that box work, you're going to be well served by that.
Okay.
Well, we should do some news here. We got Joy of Christmas coming up, Corpse Watch, top 5 songs about Superman, and more. This is Don Taylor at the News Desk.
And now, from the News Desk, this is Don Taylor.
Police say a dispute over the freshness of French fries got heated at a McDonald's in northern Ohio. Authorities say a customer refused fries waiting Sunday night in their serving pouches at the restaurant near Sandusky. The manager insisted that the fries were fresh. Police say they were called when the customer said he wouldn't leave until he got different fries. He told officers a McDonald's employee struck him with a mop. The Sandusky Register reports a witness said the worker acted only as though he was going to hit the man, and the customer called the employee a derogatory name. No charges were filed. Police say the man got his money back and left without his fries.
So is there a recording of this? Is there a recording of the call anywhere?
I don't know. I hope so.
That's too bad. This is one of those stories where it's almost unfair of them to not have the audio everywhere that the story is mentioned, everywhere that the story is posted, because that's immediately what you want. It's like, you know, it's like stories that are useless without mugshots.
Yeah.
Incidentally, the general consensus is that the Roku is great. Apparently it does Netflix and Hulu, but it does require the remote control. Hook it to your TV, log in, it'll work great. It does Netflix and Hulu. It works over Wi-Fi or wired network. It is like a TiVo, though, that you must use a remote control for it.
Well, I'll have to ask Eric why he didn't give me the remote control.
And somebody's asking for clarification on the iPhone and Netflix and your television. So I believe the deal is, now I may be wrong about this, but I believe the deal is that all of the iPhones on the market now, if they have the Netflix app, you can stream Netflix to your iPhone. But I believe it is only with the advent of the iPhone 4, which they may have fixed this with an upgrade, I don't know. But I believe it is only with the iPhone 4 that the streaming Netflix video will actually go out of your iPhone onto your television.
Hmm.
You can watch it on your iPhone, but I think the 3GS doesn't have video out of Netflix to the TV. But again, they could have changed that with the OS upgrades. So don't take Rick Emerson's word for that, because oftentimes Rick Emerson doesn't quite know that of which he speaks. So here is Don Taylor.
Two Mississippi sisters will win release from prison after serving 16 years if one donates a kidney to the other. Governor Haley Barbour has suspended Gladys and Jamie Scott's life sentences for robbing two people. NAACP President Benjamin Jealous says people have accused the governor of playing politics with the case.
Ben Hooks told me, you know, when I first took this job, don't focus on the credit. Don't focus on how the right thing gets done. Just make sure that the right thing gets done. And this is a day when the right thing has been done.
And so Haley Barbour, he's the governor?
Yes.
That's interesting, because the last time Haley Barbour is one of those guys that pops up in the news about every 10 years doing something else. He was the head of the RNC. He was the head of the Republican National Committee for a long time. And then he just sort of fell off my radar. And so now he's apparently, which is odd that a guy who was the head of the Republican National Committee is offering to, I don't know if it's a full pardon, but he's offering to let out of jail Tuesday.
He suspended their life sentences.
That's not the same thing though as a pardon. The suspended sentence is like as if they cross him, he'll stick them back in the cage.
Yeah.
Did they both commit the same crime? Do we know, or does it just say that they're both in jail?
I don't know. It says that they have life sentences for robbing two people. So
I wonder if that's so it's not just like that it's an interesting family. It's that they were they pulled the job together, as they say. So one of them gets out of jail to donate a kidney, which I can sort of get. It seems like a little unfair that the other one everyone gets out of jail just for getting the kidney.
Yeah, see, that doesn't make any sense. That's not a good deed.
No, I mean, it seems like really your jail sentence ought to be actually lengthened if you're going to be taking your sister's kidney.
Well, the NAACP fellow was asked what happens if the sisters aren't a good match for a transplant.
This is Sisters 2.
If for some reason there's not a match, you know, Gladys has nothing to worry about. No one, thinks that she needs to spend any more time in prison.
I mean, the sisters can't possibly be that old, which raises a larger question, which is why one of them is named Gladys.
Good question.
All right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and he also says there are some issues that have to be solved.
He's done the same thing here that he's done in all the cases where he finally gives a pardon, which is he has suspended their sentence. And that means that they're going to need to have supervision, and they're moving out of state. They're moving to Florida. And that's where their mom is. That's where their kids are. And so they've got to work it out with Florida.
By the way, they were sentenced to life for allegedly robbing $11.
Oh,
well done. There you go. That's one of those things where I think we had some story, I don't know, maybe last week, 2 weeks ago, where it was like a guy was pulled over for, I don't know, he's pulled over something or other, and then they just pound like pounds and pounds of marijuana in his car, and like, yeah, that's not what he was pulled over for. And that's just one of those things where you just go like, damn, crap, I've chosen so badly. I should have stayed home. To wrap up the previous issue. So yes, with the upgrade to the new OS for the iPhone, for the new iOS, mm-hmm, you probably can just stream your Netflix directly to your television if you have the correct cable. So if you have the cable that'll run your phone to your TV, you can just fire up your Netflix there and then right to your screen at home.
Never even occurred to me.
Never mind. I was going to ask a whole question about television. But you and I are on the same. We both have the big cathode ray TV,
yes,
right? You and I and Seamus.
Yes.
So, which is odd, by the way, that of the three of us, I think Bruce Agler has like a cathode ray television too as well, which is strange. So the four of us, I think none of us have like an HD TV or even a flat screen. I think it's just I think we all have the big boxy thing that we got like 10 years ago, and we're all for the same reason, because we're all tightwads and we're waiting for it to just stop working. So,
yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And it's just like, and a new TV is really expensive, and this one works, and I don't really need a new great big giant TV. I'll say, Mr. Fatboy Roberts told me last week, I went in to do Ham-Fisted Radio, and he said, yeah, Mike Russell just told me he's got like this 50-inch plasma that his father-in-law doesn't want, and he asked me if I wanted it. And he said, it's like a free TV. You should talk to him. And I was like, okay. So I immediately jumped on the iPhone, and I texted Mike Russell and going, I hear you got like a great big giant free TV. What's up with that? Fatboy said I should text you. He never got back to me. And then I didn't know if I should like call him like again, because I didn't want to be like the greedy bastard going, hey, I want your free TV.
Well, why didn't you just call him?
I don't. Once I texted him, I'd already done that thing of reaching out.
And yeah, but here's the thing: is that sometimes texts go unnoticed.
Also, I was just about to go on the air with the radio show, and I didn't want to be on the phone, and so I wanted to like send the text like right then while I was thinking about it.
Really? See, no, this is really, you've got to learn to merge the two. You should have just called him like while you were doing the show. That's
yeah,
what I would
have
done. So you texted him, so he just never replied?
This
was yesterday?
No, this was last week. This was a week ago.
So the TV's probably long gone
that
by
TV's
now. Do you know for a fact that he got rid of it?
No, I don't.
We should call him.
Right now?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
All right, you write his number down at some point. We'll call him in the next segment just to ask him. So Laura and I have to, here's the thing is that she's really agitating to get, to get like an eight. And of course, it's that thing where like every time you go to somebody's house now, it's like with every week that goes by, especially every holiday that goes by, more and more people that you know have a television, taking up one whole wall of their house. By the way, it's not even a trifecta. It's like, I don't even know what a hat trick is if there's five of them. Apparently Thomas Gill's in the same boat. I guess he has one flat screen, but everything else is just the regular tuning TV. That's weird. Of the five of us, that all of us are more or less in the same television, televisionic boat.
I do when I watch something on my laptop. A lot of times, though, I do have a like a 15-inch flat screen computer monitor. That's really nice, and I will put that like on like the coffee table right in front of me. and then plug the laptop into it, and I'll watch movies on that. And that's actually a little bit nicer than watching the, you know, 25-inch TV that's all the way across the room.
See, because there's that thing where there's the whole thing. There's a regular cathode ray television. Then there's like a flat screen. But then there's an HD, and they're all different things.
Yeah.
And there's some overlap there, but they're not all necessarily the same thing. Lara's the one who's really been pushing for it because, you know, she, at least in the last 6 months or so, she really has been gaming a lot more than I do. Like, she uses the Xbox far more than I do. Part of that is because I stole both of her laptops to use here at the studio, so she hasn't had a laptop. She's been really – I don't even know how she has functioned because since we started in like – well, we started in June and I took her first laptop. She got a replacement and I took that one about 2 weeks later. So since like July, she has been without a laptop. She's been doing everything on her phone, which I guess is maybe a testament to how great her Motorola Droid is, that she's been able to do most of her online things via the phone. Plus, she does some stuff at work, and
yeah.
It's not like she needs to be looking at like midget porn all day or something. So she can do most of that stuff like either at the office or again on her phone. But because I have a laptop, I've been watching most of my television shows on the laptop, so I haven't really needed the television that much. And she's been playing most of the Xbox, but lately she's noticed that a lot of the games, and this really is true, it's not even like her imagination, that a lot of the things on, and you wonder if this is some sort of a plot, like there's a cabal trying to get me to buy the HDTV, because we were trying to play, this is what nerds we're trying to play Risk on Xbox Live. And the thing is that the actual print, like the actual lettering on some of the play cards when you play Risk, because it's like a virtual setup of the board game like Catan, we actually couldn't even read what it said. It was like, you know, you have soldiers at your disposal, and we couldn't figure out if it was like 0 or 8. And it was like, I just don't know. What if we're annihilated? And we chose incorrect. We thought it was 8, and it turned out it was 0. And then Australia just destroyed us. So, but we noticed that we actually could not even. And I mean, I was doing that thing of getting right up next to the television too, and we couldn't read the writing on the screen. So she has been making the big push to get a higher class of television. So what we've done is we've set aside. We have started a fund. Which makes me sound like the lamest person on earth.
No, I've been thinking about just starting to put like $100 in an envelope and sticking in my underwear drawer or something now and then, and like any other. And then when I actually have like enough money for a TV in the envelope,
well,
then I'll buy it.
Which is like, you know, which makes me sound like a 1950s housewife, like I'm saving it for a new pair of pumps or something. But it's like I just cannot stand owing people money. I just hate it more than anything. I'd rather be set on fire than be in debt to people. So that's the thing, is we're going to put away like X dollars every week or whatever. And so at some point in the – so remember all that fun you had with the iPhone versus Droid versus BlackBerry conversation that went on for just like an endless number of days on the air when I was like, I don't know what to get. Let's talk about it forever while Dawn thinks about her you know, disposable cell phone at home. So you're going to get to go through all of that in a few months as I decide what television to get.
Well, you know, the prices on them are really, really good, but it's between me being just broke all of the time. But also, I have this thing where I'm so aware of all of the things that I actually need versus the things that I would like to have, like a better TV. And so anything that's over like $100, I can't pull that trigger. I just can't do it if there are other things still outstanding that need to be purchased. You know, so it's like I was looking at some of the after Christmas things, and, you know, you can get a pretty decent like 42-inch, you know, flat screen HD TV for like around $300, $400. But, you know, it's like I just immediately think, yes, but, you know, $300, I could get like a mattress. I need a better mattress. We need a couch. You know, there's all these different things that are actually more important than having a big television.
Because you don't want to be the guy living in a Maytag box outside with your huge television.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Or just like all the single guys I know that live in an apartment with just a ratty secondhand store, you know, a couch that they're sitting on, but one whole wall is nothing but a television.
Sitting in front of some like huge electronic shrine.
Yeah.
Just watching the white clown chop off people's limbs. All right. So you are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Later on in the show, we'll call Mike Russell, whose phone number has just been handed to me. We also got the Corpse Watch Joy of Christmas Top 5 coming up. Top 5 songs that reference Superman. Let's do one more here and we'll take a break.
Let's do our Corpse Watch.
Here is your Corpse Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your Corpse Watch.
A man has turned himself into authorities after being accused of stealing a handheld video game system and accessories from the casket of a Pennsylvania teen killed in an SUV crash on Christmas Day. Jody Lynn Bennett, 37, grabbed the items from the casket of 17-year-old Bradley Boog David McCombs Jr.
I didn't even get a chance to shout out, Jody Lynn Bennett! You don't quit taking things off the corpse! From Boog? Are you sure it's not Boog?
No, B-O-O-G.
I would say that's Boog.
Boog?
Short for booger.
Okay, well, Boog. During a viewing Monday night at a funeral home in Montgomery Township, McCombs died when he lost control of his SUV along Route 553 in Cherry Hill Township at about 9 a.m. on Saturday. Bennett is accused of stealing a Game Boy Light, and three games from the casket during a public visitation.
That shouldn't even be a crime. I mean, really, the crime is burying a fully functional video game system with a guy who's never going to use it. That really is, that's the offense here.
Sergeant Michael Schmidt said they confronted him. They were about to get the Game Boy back, but not the games, so they subsequently called police.
I mean, seriously, I mean, I guess maybe it's in poor taste. Maybe it's bad form. You want to at least, I don't know, maybe distract everybody. I mean, did he do it? Maybe I missed this. Did he do it, like, in front of people?
I guess someone saw him. I don't know how.
Do you suppose he tried to cover it up like he was throwing his, you know, himself on the body? Why? Why?
And into the
pocket.
Shoving him under his shirt.
Just sort of, you know, just jamming things into his pants.
They said he fled the scene after being confronted. The suspect's aunt, Diana Bennett, said her family is friends with the McCombs and was mortified by the incident. I sort of figured they'd be looking for him, she said. I wasn't there that night, but we all went over yesterday to the funeral home. She said her nephew has been into drugs. He's into alcohol. He's just messed up.
Wait, so he was probably just going to hawk these things then. He wasn't even really going to play them. This is probably a, hey, that corpse has got something shiny that I can sell for a few coins.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's the look. If you're not going to use this, I mean, if you're not going to use it and he wasn't going to use it, then I guess it's pretty much a wash and it should stay with the dead guy. But, I mean, because, you know, I don't like it. The whole thing of burying people with stuff is sort of, I mean, I don't care, but it is one of those things where you realize, like, in some ways, how fundamentally unevolved we are. From the way we were like 5,000 years ago when they were just saying, like, and bring me three of my finest cats and also those two servants and wrap them up and stick them in the pyramid with me. You know, because we still do this, like, you know, I remember my grandfather died. My parents had me go up and, like, I don't know, there was like a Catholic prayer card thing I had, like, a stick in his pocket in the casket or whatever, which is all weird.
See, I kind of, you know, I come from Irish people, so I kind of like the idea that if you're going to have, I like the idea of an actual wake that if, now granted, I intend to be cremated, so this probably won't happen. But if I was going to, like, actually be buried, I like the idea of a big party where I'm actually there. You know, I'm there. The casket is open. People are drinking and being sad, but they come over and they, like, you know, stick a bottle of whiskey under my armpit, and somebody else comes over and, you know, puts a copy of a Stiff Little Fingers LP, like, on my chest, and, you know, things like that. Somebody sticks, like, a little stuffed animal, you
See,
know, down in there.
I get the appeal there because, as I don't know, I probably mentioned that that's a thing they do on The Wire, which apparently, according to David Simon, was a thing that actually was sort of done in, it probably is not still done in Baltimore, but when he was writing the book Homicide, actually happened in Baltimore, where, because nobody needs to look the other way because they're cops. And so when a cop would die, that there was an Irish bar nearby and where they would lay the body out for a couple hours and everybody would go and they would have a drink and, here's to McWilliger. He was one of a kind or whatever. And then it goes out to the funeral home. So you see that and you go, like, well, that's kind of awesome. Except then you think about, like, the realities of, like, your body and death. And it's like, you know, the way that things just start to deteriorate, like, the instant your heart stops working. Yeah. And it's like, you know, that you would just be the big farting corpse, you know, and it's like they go, well, Don, it's been a good, you know, it was a good run. And here, you know, and suddenly what was that? Well, it was Don's body, you know, and then it's
in
like
death as in life.
Yeah. Then it's like the last memories of your body just passing gas or belching or, you know, or something falling out of one of your ears, you know, or while that, you know, your stitching coming undone while you're on the table. It just seems like you're inviting trouble.
Yeah,
you're inviting a sort of bad Farrelly Brothers film.
If I could horrify people one last time, though, I'd be fine with
There's something there. I mean, I guess if you really want to go, if you just want to go out like, and make a good strong impression, maybe that's the way to do it.
As it is, I have actual written instructions for what I want done after I die. And one of the things that I do want to be cremated, and I want souvenirs of myself given to people at the event. So
sort of like a
maybe get like a little
turtle.
Yeah, a little vial with a little bit of my ashes in it, like so that everybody gets a little piece of me.
Like St. Helen's artwork or something.
Yeah.
Awesome. I would like to just have a pinata of myself made. Not have my actual body, probably. They probably frown on that. But just like a replica of my body, you know, and just, you know, and just at the wake and just have sort of a, you know, and then fill me with delightful and delectable surprises, you know. And then, you know, then it's a sort of, then it's like a ceremonial consuming of my tasty courage and strength.
Oh, I like that.
But it would be, in fact, jolly and candy-like. I mean, in the truest sense.
That's nice.
Have we closed the corpse watch?
I think so, yes. Right, no, we haven't.
All right, well, let's do this.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
Somebody says, let me understand this. Dom was, in fact, too lazy to pick up the phone for a free TV.
I was not lazy. I was about to go on the air with a radio program.
He didn't call an hour later, though. He does have a point. It's not like you were on the air all day.
No, but I texted him. And so I figured he would text me back.
Don't look, I'm just passing along the message. Don't yell at me. I'm just conveying what... Some guy says another dream dashed by iPhone technology. But it's like the text is occasionally easy to miss, though. Sometimes people text me and I don't hear it or whatever. I guess because your ear is more accustomed to listening for a ringtone, whatever. And so it's like, and plus my texting thing, like my app icons are all terribly arranged. They're not really arranged as well as they should be. I don't mean that they're messy because The thing about Apple products, and I know this is the second day in a row we're talking about Apple stuff, but which is why we really do need an Apple Watch. The thing about Apple is that it kind of won't allow you to be messy because you have to go out of your way, like on the laptop, to tell, like on your Windows desktop, it's like you can just, your Windows desktop is basically, it's like the ocean floor after a ship sinks. It's like there's just crap scattered for 5 miles. All of it piled up, none of it making any sense. Okay. And you can right-click and go to the arrange by and try to figure it out. With the Apple, it's like the inverse. It's like the everything by default is set to be organized and in a carefully plotted little grid. You really have to go out of your way to try to make your desktop messy. So it is with the iPhone. It's just that I don't have stuff placed in order of how often I use it. So the text messages are 5 screens away. Yeah.
Well, I know that Mike has an iPhone, and I know that Mike checks his iPhone regularly, and he's on his phone quite a lot, as iPhone users often are. So I just figured he got the text, and I figured he probably didn't want to disappoint me by saying no right away, and then he probably just put it aside, and he didn't get right back to me.
You know, when we come back,
I didn't want to harass him about, you know.
I'll harass him for you.
I didn't want to be greedy.
No, you don't want to be greedy. Fine, whatever. All right, I don't have time. These are subtle distinctions I don't have time to elaborate upon. We come back. I will be greedy for you. I'll call Mike Russell, and we'll see the deal with the TV.
Okay.
I got another observation to make about that, but I can wait until the other side. We've also got Joy of Christmas on the way, top 5 songs referencing Superman, and so forth. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Back after this. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
If you don't know by now, then it ain't no use to say.
listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us at 503-505-6964. Now, people are just lining up asking if they can have the TV if he still has it and you don't want it.
Well, why would I not want it?
Whoa, that's weird. Hold on a second. I've inadvertently turned up your reverb.
Yeah.
I think the, again, messenger message, I think that the school of thought is that because you didn't care enough to make a phone call, don't throw your hands up at me. I'm just telling you. I'm giving you my read on the audience's assessment of the situation, which is that you cared enough to text, not enough to call. And so, therefore, it doesn't fall into the category of a thing you were really that concerned about. This is just my... I'm just guessing. This is my gut sense. If you had to... if the audience were here collectively and you asked them to describe what was going through their heads, I think it would be that. Because there's things you text about and there's things you call about.
I guess. That's also this thing when you hear secondhand from someone else, hey, this mutual friend of ours offered me a TV. He might still have it. Why don't you get a hold of him?
Okay.
You send the text. You go, you still got the TV. He doesn't go back. You know, I don't want to just start harassing my friend and saying, can I have your TV? What about that TV? Can I have the TV? I don't want to be that guy.
You know, but see, here's the thing is I think you're overthinking it because it's not like you would have been that guy. I mean, I think well, let me ask you this before I even dial this in. Let's see. Doing that thing if all the numbers are running together. All right, there we go. So before I actually dial the number here for Mike Russell, so do you consider one text and one phone call the same thing as two phone calls?
Yeah, I think I probably would.
Because, like, guys, you know, guys have that whole thing about, like, how often do you call a girl or, you know, whatever. Like, I know a lot of guys where the rule, the post-date contact rule is that they will do one follow-up after, like, if they go out on a girl and they have a date or whatever.
Yeah.
That they'll do one follow-up phone call or email or whatever. And then if they don't hear back, they'll do one more, but the second one is very much like, I'll leave everything. Like, it's, you know, I'll leave the ball in your court. Because any more than two, it's like she might miss one. She's not going to miss two of them. And so, you know, if you don't hear back after the second one, then you know she's not interested. So the question is, is one text and one phone call the same as doing two calls?
I would think so, kind of, yeah. And also, it's different for me if I'm trying to get somebody to give me something.
Well, presumably something that he said. Now, was he selling this or was he just parting with it?
From what I heard from Fatboy was he was just offered to give it to Fatboy Roberts.
Now, are you thinking, let me ask you this, be honest, is part of your reluctance that you think he was offering to give it to Fatboy, not so much offering to give it to, like, to you?
There's that. Yeah, because he didn't offer it to me. He offered it to someone else.
So when you said that he got back to you late...
And I didn't hear, like, Mike just has this TV and he's looking for someone to give it to me.
He can't even give it away.
Yeah, the thing was, Mike offered me this TV and I don't really have any need or room for it. Why don't you get a hold of him and see, you know, if he's still got it, if he'd give it to you?
And then he didn't respond to you in any way. He didn't say no or it's gone or that was for Fatboy only because I don't like you.
Right.
It was just, he just didn't respond.
Right.
Have you talked to him since then? In any way?
No, this was a week ago. No, I haven't talked to him since.
Okay, so it's not like you saw him in public and he pretended that he never got the message.
No, I mean, we've been playing Words with Friends, but we haven't actually had a conversation.
Is that the Scrabble thing?
Yeah.
Does Words with Friends have, like, a chat option? Could he have talked to you during Words with Friends? Like, is there, like, a little scroll box at the bottom where you can be like, I just pwned you?
There's a little taunty thing you can use, but it's not very good, and I always forget to check it.
All right. So it's not, in all likelihood, it's not like there was a real easy avenue of conversation that could have been had between the two of you between now and then.
Right. Than him just texting me back, responding to my text.
Well, let's call him and let's see what his response is to this.
He may be at work right now, so he might not be available.
Well, that's fine. I'll leave a message. Should I leave a message?
Hello?
Hey, Mike Russell. This is Rick Emerson and Don Taylor calling during the middle of the Rick Emerson Show. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm fine. Am I calling at a bad time? Are you in a meeting? Are you in some precarious position right now where having a conversation is a bad idea?
No. Not at all.
All right. Let me ask you this. And by the way, let me just say that this phone call is being placed because Rick Emerson cares about his friends and colleagues, Don Taylor falling into both categories. This call is being made to clarify something about which we were something we were discussing earlier. So I heard tell. I heard through the grapevine that you, Mike Russell, had at one point a television that you no longer needed or required or that was superfluous in your life and you were going to be getting rid of it. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm actually was going to call Dawn about that today because I needed to confirm I could actually give it to her. But yeah, it's I have an HDTV I don't need.
Wait a minute. So
are
you
we putting this on the show?
yes, it actually is on the show right now as we speak. So here's the reason I ask is because so Dawn texted you about this last week, I think, because Fatboy had mentioned to her that you had a TV that you were just going to be and this is a TV you're not selling. This is just a TV you're giving away out of the goodness of your heart.
I was given an HDTV. And it's too large for my house.
Let me understand this. As an American, this offends me just on principle. You are giving away a television because it is, quote, too large.
That's correct.
Well,
you should see this thing. This thing is a monster.
Do you know how, do you know what size it is? You know, actually, how big we're talking about?
Oh, for God's sake. it's like.
I'm sorry.
You know, I don't want to. This is a little weird because I just don't want to sound like I'm fucking Scrooge McDuck swimming around in televisions where there used to be coins.
I'm just curious.
I'm just up to my eyeballs in TVs over here.
I'm just no. It's funny.
Yeah,
look.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not. I'm not.
Okay, let me ask you this.
Here.
Just let me ask you this.
It is a 55-inch television.
Holy crap!
Plasma screen. It is about 4 years old, so it has. It isn't state of the art. I mean, it is state of the art for its time, but it isn't like LED. It isn't hyper thin like a lot of the newer televisions, and it takes up. It has such a gigantic signature in the house that it becomes completely overwhelming. And I frankly don't watch enough TV to justify putting something this vulgar in my home.
You could almost,
if it had more of a matte finish, you could pull several automobiles up to it and call it a drive-in. It's a ridiculous device.
Now, when you say you were given a TV, am I to assume, my assumption here is that you were given another television, like for Christmas or recently or something, and so that has made this one superfluous?
No, not at all. I, in fact, until about 3 days ago, was a tube television user. I frankly... You know, in terms of the way media has been changing, I watch most of my TV on a computer. I use Netflix extremely extensively, which means you can climb into bed with a laptop and watch a lot of TV.
So
I just generally don't. I don't have cable. I don't have. I generally take most of my television. If I do turn on the TV, it's whatever's on the air right now. So, I'm kind of sort of retro in that regard.
When you say you were given a television, so is the television that you were giving away now, is this the TV that you were given, or were you given another television? I'm just curious.
I have a relative who has is a big tech guy who is of a certain amount of means, and he basically said, "Hey, Mike, do you want this TV?" I said, "Yes, I would." just as a matter of course, I think when you're offered something that expensive, you should just say yes.
All right, so you are the.
I took it into my home and found out it didn't work in my home.
So you're the Dewey to his Scrooge, really, is what we're talking about here.
Yes, really. And I'm Don, Dewey or Louie.
And Don is one of the Beagle Boys who will now be taking the television from you. So here's the backstory. So here's what had happened.
Let me finish real quick.
Yeah,
the reason I haven't texted Don back yet about this is because as soon as I realized I didn't want it, I needed to talk to him and make sure he didn't want it back. Yes, I, as soon as I cleared this with him, which I believe happened 2 days ago, I was just about to contact her.
All right. See, because there was all of this perceived awkwardness because she had talked to Bobby and Bobby had said, "Hey, Mike has this TV that he was talking to me about. And it's like, I don't need it. And, maybe you should talk to him about it." And Don said, "By God, I will." So Don last week sends this text saying, "Hey, what about that television?" And then, as she put it, "And then he never got back to me." So she was and she was reluctant to do a follow up call because she didn't want to seem. And I swear to God, this is what she said. She said she didn't want to do a follow-up call because she didn't want to look greedy as she was trying to figure out what other mechanisms she could use to get this free television from you.
No, I was not. I was just saying this happened, and he didn't get back to me, so I figured no TV. That was it.
Well, to be fair, the holidays were going on in the middle of
this.
And second of all, I understand that. Let's unpack this further. Don didn't want to put me on the spot.
Yes, thank you very much.
So we're talking about it on the show.
That's right. Well,
thank you. Thank you very much.
She's getting it squared away.
Because I was willing to take the...
Now I'm discussing this in front of as many as four figures worth of people.
I was willing to take the awkward bullet for her because, I was willing to sort of like an impartial moderator because I didn't want there. Because then it was a whole thing of like, well, have you seen him since then? Well, we play Word Feud together. Well, could he have messaged you during Word Feud to say like yes or no or it's already taken? Well, I guess, but he hasn't. And so that it was just going to be freighted with awkward expectations. It was going to be like an inverted pyramid of social stress the next time you spoke. So I was trying to alleviate that tension preemptively.
Yes.
Rick Emerson is a healer. I bring people together, Mike.
Well, you've certainly scored a slam dunk in that regard.
It, it did occur to me just now as we started the phone call, it did occur to me that you had actually, that there had been something lost in translation and that you had been intending to sell the television, but that I somehow inadvertently leveraged you into giving it away by framing it as that right at the outset of the call. So, you know,
well,
there is that.
Let me tell you, what actually happened is because the television was given to me as a gift, I felt that I, in the spirit of Christmas, should also give this away as a gift.
Excellent.
Whoever I'm giving this to will receive other gifts, such as increased energy bills, because when you turn this thing on, the lights in your house dim.
Oh, God. So, fantastic.
So, they will also... I appreciate your trying to break through the logjam of social awkwardness. And, yes, Don, I was actually about to text you on this very subject and say, would you like a TV? You have another issue, by the way, though. I know you've talked openly about certain issues that you've been facing in your own home with health, right?
Yes.
So here's the problem. This thing weighs 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Getting it mounted or taken down is actually going to require a really ridiculous amount of lifting.
Well, here's the thing is that Patrick is never going to become healthy if we don't tax his body at every opportunity possible.
Sure. Part of his therapy. We can make this part of his therapy.
If you want more muscle, pick up a bigger weight. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, we got to strengthen his core, really.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So, I mean, really, you know, it's not, you know, adversity builds character. It's, you know, one can't grow if one is not challenged. Also, I'm not helping with this. I'm saying that right now. Rick Emerson has helped as much as he's going to on this issue. My help is, and it's more of a theoretical help, you know, if anything. It's I will not be assisting in any way beyond what I've. If it involves getting out of this chair, I'm not going to.
Oh
do
no!
It.
Oh no! I think the price for this should be you come over with a hand truck.
There we are.
All right. Well. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you spending some time with us.
He's actually cackling.
Yes. All right. Well.
No. Actually, I apologize, Don, for not getting back to you. I have been a little waylaid with out of town company, among other things, and really needed to get some permissions cleared before I got back to you.
I understand.
I probably should have just sent you a text to that effect. But as you know, I'm a lousy correspondent.
There is that.
All right. Well, thank you for indulging our juvenile foolishness, Mr. Russell.
No, it's no problem at all. This has been a fascinating exercise in living in public.
All right. All right. Mike Russell, read him in print at the Oregonian or online at culturepulp.com. Thank you, my friend. Have a good day.
Yeah, no problem, man. I'm supposed to be on the show again.
All right. Anytime. The door is always open. All right. Have a good new year.
All right. Groovy, man.
All right. Talk to you soon. There you go. That's Mike Russell. There you go. That wasn't awkward.
No, not at all.
Much? All right. Well, look, how was I to know that he was just about to text you? I had no it did. Right as we were talking, though, I did sort of have this thing of like, oh, God, what if he was really what if he was saying like it was like sort of a figure speech, like I'm practically giving it away. But he was really actually selling it.
Right.
And then here I was just sort of, you know, immediately like painting him into this sort of financial corner with it. But then I realized it doesn't really affect me at all.
Yeah.
So.
And if he was hoping to stick me for some money, hey, it's free now.
Yeah. I tried to be pretty clear at the beginning of that call, by the way, that it was during the show. Feels like at one point he said, is this going to be for the show? And I mean, it doesn't really seem, I mean, I guess I could just start with the whole, like, you're on the air thing, which I guess I just got away from doing because you didn't, you know.
Well, you did say calling you here during the Rick Emerson show.
So maybe he thought I was calling during a break or something, but no, that was not the, All right. Well, what are you going to do? It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Still to come, Joy of Christmas and your top five. We got the top five songs about Superman. Join us tomorrow when our guest will include Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll do his year-end installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Also tomorrow, we have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. At the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Hey, somebody is suggesting that you have Squires Electric come out and install and wire that thing up.
Well, you know, I was thinking it was just a TV. Now it's like, well, getting it up on the wall and doing that. I'm like, well, how much is going to be involved in this?
Well, it is.
Now I'm committed.
Well, that's the thing is now you can't. See, the thing is now you can't. Now you can't say no. You can't turn it down. You must find a way to make it work in your home. And here's the thing about TVs like that. I suspect that TVs like that are going to be to people 15 years from now the way that TVs of our parents' generation are to us, where it's like the TV inside, the big wood casing with the doors, with like the little drawers that don't open, with the brass handles that, you know, that don't move at all, the, you know, where it basically is just a piece of furniture, kind of like how your grandparents' hi-fi system may have been. Because that's, I mean, because those TV, and I know exactly what he's talking about, where it's like how, you know, computer monitors were thought to be, you know, sleek and stylish at one point too, but, you know, when they still had like the big-ass bulky tube in the back.
Yeah.
So this is, but you know, it's probably going to be, it's going to be better than what you have now, most likely.
Yeah.
Do you even have a place for a 60-inch television in your house?
It's going to have to go on this one wall, like in my living room, because there's nowhere else for it.
Relative to the Walter Cronkite painting, where is that?
To the right. There's just where the bookcases were when you were at my
house. That'll be a good place, though. It'll work. Yeah. It'll work there. All right. You know, and I mean, you know, free. So,
yeah.
All right. Here is Don Taylor.
2010's top grossing concert act was Bon Jovi, according to a concert trade publication, Pollstar. Editor-in-chief, whose name coincidentally is Gary Bon Jovani, says U2 came in third, mainly because they had to cancel the North American leg of their tour.
His name is
Concerts.
Bon. Let me see. This is Concerts. No, I've minimized all my windows here, so I have to bring it back up. His name is
Bon Giovanni.
All right. He says that U2 is number one.
U2 was third, actually, they had to cancel their North American tour.
Health problems that caused them to have to cancel the North American leg of the tour this year. And it's been postponed into 2011. Otherwise, their numbers would have been larger, although I'm not sure that it would have eclipsed Bon Jovi, but it probably would have given them a good run.
He sounds like a really exciting guy.
Yeah.
I wasn't even aware. Does U2 have a new album out? Or do they even have to put out albums at this point? Go ahead and go, like, we're U2, and then people just sort of show up and give them their money.
Yeah, they're like the Rolling Stones that way. They just roll through town, and people go, woohoo, here's, like, a ridiculously overinflated amount of money for a ticket.
I have never seen U2. And, you know, here's the thing. In some bands, like, I sort of regret that, or I lament the fact that I never, like, with R.E.M., I never saw R.E.M., and I kind of wish that I had, because they didn't really tour much at all, ever. You know, but it's like with U2, I know that I'm supposed to feel like some sort of a gap or a void in my cultural knowledge or my life experience I have not seen, but it's like I just don't care.
No, I've never seen them either, and I just remember when their concert tickets like topped out at like something like $175 a few years ago, and I just realized, and I never will.
Yeah, I mean that's because otherwise you just, it's like when I went to see Simon and Garfunkel at the when they were doing their reunion tour, which was great by the way, but I got to tell you that I don't know if I was unemployed or not, but it was like I did. But I missed, for whatever reason, we didn't get the good seats, and I was either unemployed or we might have purchased tickets too late or something. But I mean, even like the nosebleeds, it's like way, way, way in the back, like way up top. They were like $65 or something, and it was like, and the stage was just minuscule from there. And you know that's the thing with U2 as well, where they've reached that point where they are, because they no longer say nostalgia act or oldies act. The term in the concert industry is legacy act. So they are like, which I first heard used about the Cure of all bands, but they are a legacy act, meaning that you don't really care about whatever their new record is. It's like you're going to hear them sing, you know, Friday I'm in Love or something. So it is with U2, which is, and plus all the guys who grew up listening to U2 are now adults, and so many of them are successful enough that they can buy those like Golden Circle tickets for like $350. Here's the best thing I ever saw at a concert. It was the Rolling Stones, you know, who really have pioneered. The Rolling Stones are really responsible for the whole new tiered system of pricing at shows, where you do get those seats down front, and the Rolling Stones were actually selling at their show. It was like the ticket itself was like $300. But for an additional $150 on top of that, I swear to God, they would just give you a folding, like a metal folding chair onto which they had glued a thing that just said Rolling Stones. And it was like not even, I mean, it was just a metal-ass folding chair. And they glued like a sticker on it with the band's logo, and that was another $150.
Did you get to keep the chair?
I believe so. I believe you were able to come by the next day and pick it up at
sort
the venue.
Like when you spend too much for a drink and you get to keep the cup?
Yes, that's exactly what it was like, but you have to come back and pick up the cup the next day. Also, it was $150 worth of cup.
So I like some of the packages they have for shows at like Vegas and stuff. Like the Spamalot show had these really interesting packages that you could get where there was like if you bought the ticket and for X amount of money, you got to go on this backstage tour and see like and meet like members of the cast, but actually see the back of the stage and where all of the props were and all that sort of thing. And then you got like a you got like a pewter mug to drink your beverage out of or something like that. But it was sort of like, you know, it cost extra money. But there was, you know, there was actual added value to it besides just having a good seat.
And I would rather have the like the flagon for my grog or whatever. I'd rather have that. You know, here's the thing that doesn't get me to buy concert tickets at an inflated price is the promise of the so-called meet and greet. Because the meet and greet sucks. It always sucks. I mean, it's not like I'm, you know, like I'm too good for it or whatever. I mean, I'm a dork for celebrities like everybody. But I mean, I guess maybe just especially working in radio, it's like I've been at so many of those where like, and it's just so perfunctory. Like it's just, you know, I mean, and I guess it's cool if you get like a photograph of somebody who's probably going to die soon, you know. Like I got my picture with Rickles, so when Rickles, you know, when Rickles snuffs it, I can be like, look at this, it's me and Don Rickles. He's dead now. You can't get a picture with him, but I have one. That's it. But I mean, other than that, because like you know, the artist. See, I like the illusion that the artist cares about me is the thing. I like the illusion that the artist loves me and respects me as an individual, not just as a fan. And that he knows that I know the deeper meaning of his work. You know, that it's like we've talked about this. Certain people we just don't want to meet because it's like you don't want to be let down by them. Mm. Because if you just met somebody and it's like they were, you know, it's like you were a huge fan or they were really important to you, or if you just went, you just poured out your soul about how much their music touched your life and they were just like, hey, guy, that's great. Wham, and chucked you on the shoulder and then took the picture and then vanished. It's like he would just, you know, and it's.
That's one reason why I don't. Generally feel any I don't usually feel interest in meeting most celebrities unless you know just to meet them I've never ever been somebody who wanted to get like autographs and I just it's like when we had the one thing when you and I went to see Jonathan Colton
right.
And we had the wristbands and we could go and meet them afterwards and stuff because we were on the list and the thing is I gave my and Patrick's wristbands to these two friends of ours that are like super, super, you know, Jonathan Colton fans, because I knew that they would get like a huge kick out of talking to him. Whereas if I did, it would just be like, hi, I really like your music a lot and you're very cool. Okay, I'm leaving now.
And then he just stares at you.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's really great. No, that's nice. I've never heard that before. That's
yeah, I
awesome.
Have no, I, it's like I have nothing to bring to this relationship. It's not like I'm going to be, my conversation is going to be sparkling and he's going to go, wow, you're great. Let's be friends.
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to be me going, hi. Well, I met you now.
You know, and here's the thing about a guy like Colton, and you know, I love Jonathan Colton, but it's a double-edged sword with that guy because on the one hand, I was going to say, he's just like us, which clearly isn't true because he's Jonathan Colton and I'm, you know, me. So he's, you know, he's like a much better version, you know, of me. He's like a better, more successful, more talented, funnier, better looking, better educated version of me. But other than that, we're exactly the same. And so you think like, well, you know, I could talk to him because he's just a guy. And in all fairness, you know, having met a few, he does seem like a really normal, down to earth guy. Doesn't seem fazed by the fact that, you know, he's got like crazed packs of nutcase fans following him around everywhere. You know, and there's something about fans of like college rock and like nerd rock, especially, where they are like freakishly devoted on some level that it's like most other music just can't. I mean, it's just like Deadheads and like Colton fans, and they might be Giants fans and Weird Al fans and Zappa fans. You know, they're all the same. But it's like on the one hand, Colton seems like a really, really normal, you know, smart guy. And that's the other thing about him, you know, that you go, well, and he's really smart, too, which is true.
Yeah.
But it's like, don't you just assume this about that guy, too, that he's actually so smart that – he's so smart that you almost don't want to say anything like, you know, oh, your music is really great. I'm a huge fan. It means – because you just assume that in his head he is just trying to calculate the number of times that he's already heard that or that he would just immediately – and I'm not saying he would dismiss it, but you almost feel like he would because he's a smart, really savvy guy and he doesn't go in for a lot of corny nonsense. And so you feel like anything you could say would just sound unbelievably cliched to him, you know? You know, it's like you figure, well, the guy went to, you know, like he went to, you know, he went to Harvard. I mean, it's like, what can I possibly say that isn't just going to ring unbelievably false and contrived? So then it's like you just psych yourself out about the whole thing.
Well, also, I have that emotional reaction like being in high school and being around people who are just like, I think are really cool and I wish they would like me, but I have nothing to bring to the table. So it's kind of like, you know, I just see, you know, here's Jonathan Colton, here's Paul and Storm, who spend weekends hanging out with like Neil Gaiman and John Hodgman and the guys from Mythbusters. And I sort of feel like, can I please be your friend so that I can hang out with you and Paul and Storm and the guys from Mythbusters and Neil Gaiman? Please love me. And it's sort of like there is no reason why they would want me to be
right.
their friend at all.
Well, that's just like that's like with what's his name with John Rogers, the leverage guy. So it's like he's done Outlook Portland twice, and the second time, and again, I mean, and we should say that it's like, you know, Colton, great guy, not standoffish at all, very warm, very funny, very approachable. Same with John Rogers, and that's a guy that like. I mean, both of those guys, it's like, you know, Rogers is a guy, if he wanted to, he could be a real dick. He could be like, I wrote Transformers, F you. And it's to his credit that he's not, that he's very, but we're like standing in the lobby of the CW or whatever, and it's like me and Cheryl and, you know, the guy who wrote Transformers. And he's like checking his messages, and he's like, it's like, hold on a second. And I was like, I got to, Will Wheaton wants to go drinking. Oh, all right. Well, you know, that Wheaton, it's like you just see Will Wheaton, and it's like he's just dragging you out to bars. And then it's like half the time Adam Savage is there, and it's like I don't get home until 4 a.m. And like Cheryl's like, you should ask him, if you can hook up with him sometime in L.A. And I'm like, I'm not, I have nothing. I have nothing to give him. I have nothing he needs.
And deep down inside, you know that you will make that offer and you'll just get the raised eyebrow and the response like, yeah, sure, we'll do that.
Yeah, we'll, call my people about that. And meanwhile, he's just putting my name on, like, block on his phone. So, all right, here is, I don't even know what we're doing today. It's not like it's been a bad show. It's just one of those shows where at any given point, I have no idea what we just did or what we're doing next. We're in a fog today. Me, at least, I'm in a haze.
Let's do Joy of Christmas, because that'll give it some structure. That'll
sure.
be a thing.
That's a nice lie we
block.
Tell ourselves, isn't it, Don? All right, here's your Joy of Christmas for Thursday.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Here is Don Taylor with your Joy of Christmas.
Christmas item one of three. A thief apparently smashed into an Athens, Georgia home and left notes wishing the owner a Merry Christmas. A police report said an officer noticed the broken window while patrolling on Sunday. Inside the ransacked home, police officers found notes left on two beds reading, "Thank you, Merry Christmas." The Athens Banner-Herald reports the notes were scrawled on white cards with a yellow marker. Police were not immediately sure what was missing since the residents were traveling.
You know, that's just a dick move to leave the. That's not even being stylish. That's just being an ass if you leave a card. Also, it's not terribly bright. But, I mean, leaving that aside is just it's just socially inappropriate.
Item two, a baby Jesus figurine that turned up on top of a Kansas City, Kansas family's car this week has been returned to its rightful owner. The ceramic statue showed up on Sunday morning, along with a bunch of for sale signs from different properties in a family's front yard near Wyandotte County Lake in Kansas. After the story about the statue aired on television, the Reverend Clark Armstrong called to say that it was his. Armstrong said the nativity set was specially made for his family years ago by another family. Jalinda Cervantes said it was her pleasure to bring the statue back to its rightful owner. I'm absolutely delighted to be able to bring this baby Jesus back home where it definitely belongs. That means a lot to us. Armstrong said the Dow family, whose name on the bottom of the statue made it easy to identify, made the statue after he helped them through the death of a loved one. The Armstrong family had offered a reward to neighborhood children who have looked for the statue for 2 days. Cervantes wouldn't take the reward money and insisted that it go to the children who were searching for it.
Excellent.
And item the three, a Dallas pastor accused of stealing more than $10,000 worth of fur coats, designer purses, and electronics from a church member's home on Christmas Eve says that she's innocent. "I thought I was helping," said Sandy McGriff, 52, by way of explaining why she was found at the home of Sarita Agnew by police last week. McGriff, pastor of the Church of the Living God, spent part of Christmas Day in jail and was released on $26,000 bail. Police responded to a neighbor's 911 call on Friday. They found a broken kitchen window and saw McGriff carrying two fur coats out of the house. They also found a laptop and three purses in McGriff's Jaguar. According to the news, McGriff told officers, a friend had sent her to pick up her coats and that her arm was injured because she couldn't find the key under the doormat and had to break in through a window. Police called the resident, Sarita Agnew, who told them she hadn't given anyone permission to go into her house and take her fur coats.
Yes, the story seems implausible.
McGriff, who's been a pastor for 8 years, told a different story to reporters who she invited to her home. In a taped interview, she admits to speaking with Agnew on Christmas Eve, but says she was simply in the neighborhood later when something told her to drive by Agnew's house. There, she said she saw two men coming out of the side of the house.
Uh-huh.
She pulled into the driveway to investigate. After not finding the spare key, she went around the building and saw that the window was broke. My mistake was I did not call 911 and I went through the window, she said. I just used poor judgment. She went in the house. I said, well, let me get what I know they would probably want. And
I see. So she's pre-stealing to keep the thieves from taking it.
I think so.
So this
yeah.
is her story, is that, like, I don't want them to take your television, so I will take it and keep it safe at my home or perhaps
right.
at a local pawn shop.
Exactly.
All right.
She was
excellent.
Taking the fur coats and the laptop and storing them safely in her car to keep them from potential thieves.
Awesome. There you go. There's your Joy of Christmas for Thursday, December 30th.
Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Excellent. Somebody wants to know, for reasons that I don't really understand, I guess maybe because part of the earlier conversation, somebody wants to know if you still own a VCR.
A VCR? No.
Yeah, I don't think they're being snarky. I think they were curious about whether you, if you still absorb, you take in media in all of its various forms, or if you've, since you seem to be dragging your feet in this one particular area, technologically speaking.
No, I don't believe I do anymore, although my DVD player is actually quite old. It needs replacing as well, because it takes a while to.
Isn't that one of those things that has to warm up?
Well, it's a 5-disc changer, and it does a thing where you put the disc in, and then it has to, like, kind of drag it around into place, and it's really old, and so at this point it's just tired, so it just kind of goes chunk it a chunk it a chunk it a chunk, and you sit there for a while going load.
Well, it's like that thing, too. Here's something that I won't miss about ordering DVDs from Netflix is the thing that I always seem to get the one DVD that we will not play inside my TiVo DVD player, because I have the TiVo burner, which is great because I said at the time it was like the last TiVo I ever had to buy because I could record things and then burn them right to DVD. But it's like the problem with buying – I should have known better. The problem with buying a TiVo that had a DVD burner in it is that if either part of it goes down, then you're screwed on the whole thing because you got to, like, send it back to the TiVo company to be repaired or whatever. So it's like then you're out the DVD player.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't want to be out the TiVo. So it's like the DVD player stops working. You're basically – you don't want to get rid of the TiVo just to get the DVD thing fixed. That seems pointless. Then you're just stuck there with a thing that half works. So – and it's – and here's the other thing is that I know that they sell, like, the thing in the stores – that is like to clean your DVD player, but those things never work. It's
no.
like the thing that it's like where you buy it, and it's basically just like a CD with like a little brush that they've glued to it in China, and you're supposed to, which I always imagined is just doing horrible things
yeah.
to the inside of your machine. Like, who thinks that who thinks that's a great idea is just to stick like a little broom inside that goes around at 1,000 RPMs. But so the DVD player in my TiVo has just gotten old and dusty and whatever, and so it's very persnickety. And I'll get things from Netflix, and even if – and it's like they will just – and does your DVD player do this too, where it just will seize on a particular movie that it will not play?
Yeah.
And there appear to be no scratches, no defects, no flaws, and it will in fact play other DVDs that are scratched way more. They're all scuffed and have got, like, you know, crap spilled on them and big thumbprints. But then it's like you'll put in a pristine DVD of, like, whatever, and it just decides, like, well, no, I'm not going to play this one. And for reasons that are never really understandable by you, it just won't play it.
Yeah, that's happened with me a lot of times with DVD screeners that I get from studios. And it seems to be, with my DVD player, it seems to be an issue of the thickness of the plastic of the disc, that some DVDs, for some reason, whether it's because they've glued a label to it or if it's just the particular manufacturer of that disc, they'll be a little thicker and a little heavier than other discs. And my DVD player does not like those at all. It just doesn't – I don't know if it just won't – it won't spin around fast enough or what the deal is, but it'll just be like, no – there's no disc in here. Nope, don't see anything. Nope. And I'm like, come on!
Here's the other thing that'll happen. If you use, like, really cheap CDs to burn stuff, the silver coating actually wears away really quickly, and then they become effectively transparent, and the laser just goes straight through.
Ugh.
That's a thing that I discovered, because I would just buy, like, the cheapest possible CDs for recording, because you always feel like you're being swindled if you buy, like, a really expensive version of something like that. It's like when you – it's like people who buy Monster Cable, you know? And it's like you always just feel like you're being horked. So I would buy the really, really cheap-ass CDs, and then the silver would just wear away within the course of, you know, like 2 or 3 weeks. And a guy just described me. He said – well, he's like, well, yeah, the laser needs to, like, bounce back and, you know, relay the information back to the machine. He's like, if it's transparent, the laser just goes all the way through, which is why nothing plays. But with the DVD, the frustrating thing is when you put it in And it's like there's that moment where you think it's going to work and it does that. But then you hear it doing that like, as it's trying to like, as it's trying to find the movie. It's just the most frustrating thing on earth.
I went through that just the past like month or so with the CD DVD-ROM player in drive in my laptop. And then it just finally just stopped working entirely. And it's kind of, you know, and granted, my laptop is like 5-6 years old. I mean, I've had it for a really long time, but it's sort of like, it's just frustrating to just kind of go, really?
Well, and
you're
then
just going to just die? Really?
And then there's the thing where, like, you know you could probably get it repaired, but then you wonder if there's even any point to that. You know, like getting the CD-ROM drive in your HP laptop, you know, which is however many years old, getting it fixed. Or, you know, but then you haven't quite decided what you're going to get for a laptop. You don't have the money saved up. So you end up just using this laptop that kind of works for a long time, which is the most frustrating thing on
earth. And also my thought is, you know, I know that it's not that expensive to buy a new drive. And I feel like I should be able to just flip the thing over and take it apart and put it back in myself.
And yet,
but I don't trust myself to do that.
No.
Because I am almost superstitiously, you know, convinced that I will do something horrible to the laptop that will just destroy everything in it if I attempt to do that.
That's like when I was adding this machine over here that does our mobile stream, when I was adding extra RAM to that, because, you know, it's like when we first started the show, it's like we didn't really anticipate the strain that was going to be put on some of the machines. So I was adding extra RAM, and I go to the store and I buy the, you know, for the Apple or the Mac store, and I buy the extra RAM, and I'm here, and I talked to Thomas and to Seamus, and I was like, okay, you guys, you know, tell me what, and I felt like one of those. I felt like an episode of the, you know, like some episode of the X-Files where I'm having to, you know, where I'm having to operate on myself, you know, at my snow station in the Atlantic, you know, like, or, you know, the Arctic Circle or something, you know, while Mulder is talking to me, you know, like over like a video conferencing screen about how to remove the chip from my brain. But so they're talking to me on the phone and I'm getting ready to put the thing in. And they both said to me separately, they both said, oh, and by the way, you have to make absolutely sure that you discharge all of the static electricity from your body before you take the back panel off or you will destroy the entire machine. They're like, it's like if you touch the motherboard and there's any electricity in your body at all, like you could just fry the entire thing and it would never work again. And so that, you know, that's the thing of like with the laptop where you just assume that you're going to electrocute yourself or you're just going to irrevocably damage like whatever's left of it. Here's the final thing about this is that the interstitial technology, that's always the thing that I can get rid of. The older technology is the thing that I have great difficulty with because I always lie and I tell myself at some point that I will transfer it all to the new medium. So, for example, in my basement, I still have a not just vinyl, a lot of which I will actually keep in vinyl form, but I actually have like probably 5 milk crates full of VHS tapes that I will never watch. I'll never watch, and I will almost certainly never, ever, ever archive them digitally. I mean, my DVDs, I'm actually moving to digital form. I'm actually just ripping out because I can put them right on my laptop. Before I go to bed at night, I go, you know, encode, and it just rips everything off there. You know, it encodes it as a digital file, and then I put it on my drive, and I'm good. The, you know, the VCR actually requires, like, I got to, like, put the videotape in, set the VCR, and then I got to run the video in, and then I got to capture it, and I got to do whatever. And it's like I don't do any of that stuff, and yet the stuff sits in my basement because I can't quite throw it out. So they just sit there collecting dust. They will never be encoded.
I've gotten that way about some information that I want to get off of the computer sometimes, too. Like, I will just end up with massive amounts of graphic images. And there are things from, you know, things I've used for projects, things that are like logos and banners and stuff for businesses, but also just like lots and lots of photos that I've downloaded and then I used for things I uploaded to like cinematical articles or something like that. And for some reason, I have this thing in my head where I think I may need all of this stuff sometime.
Of course.
But it takes up huge amounts of space on my computer. So about once a year, I will like burn it all to a CD and then like label it and put it aside and then delete it off of my laptop. And the thing is, I have never, with the exception of like the graphics for like the chocolate business, I have never once needed any of those photographs, any of those pictures, any of it. But I can't just delete it because I just have – there's this weird fear I have that it'll be gone forever. I mean, this is – and most of this is stuff that I found – like on the internet.
And somebody will – do you have that picture of the Sasquatch riding a camel? I need that right now.
Yeah. And it's never happened.
Yeah.
But I can't just delete it and make it go away forever because it's like, damn it, I needed it once.
And of course, if you go looking for a photo, you will never be able to find it because the photos – unless you took the time to label all 9,000 digital photos, they are all just labeled like DSC underscore 09398425.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
you're just like, crap. Let's do one more. We'll do it. Jesus, it's 3:15 already.
I know.
What does the time go when we're doing like nothing? Let's do one more, then we'll do the top five, and we will make way for Greg and Sarah.
All right. Jeremy Clarkson and his Top Gear co-stars have sparked religious outrage after dressing up in burqas on a Boxing Day special. Clarkson and Richard Hammond decided to dress in niqabs, a form of burqa where everything but the eyes are covered, in order to disguise themselves on the road. They also got James May in on the act when they greeted him from the hospital after he fell and hit his head on rocks in the Syrian desert. But their joke backfired after they were slammed by Muslims for mocking their religion. Islamic extremist Anjem Choudhury said, "The burqa is a symbol of our religion and people should not make jokes about it in any way. It would have been equally bad if they'd not been in a country mainly populated by Muslims." On the British Boxing Day episode of the show, the trio were driving across the Middle East to follow the path of the three wise men. In the episode, which was watched by 6 million people, they drove specially customized sports cars to Bethlehem via Turkey, Syria, and Jordan. While in Syria, their cars got stuck in the sand, and as Clarkson was trying to tow Hammond out, May, who was holding the rope between the two cars, was knocked to the ground when it went taut, cutting open his head in the process. With blood pouring from his head, he was taken to the hospital, and Clarkson and Hammond carried on when they had an idea to disguise themselves as women in burqas so as not to be seen diverting from the sands of the desert to the road.
Are you sure Bing Crosby wasn't in this?
They then greeted May from the hospital dressed head to toe in the niqabs before hitting the road again. But their choice of attire caused a storm online on Twitter and other discussion sites. BBC has said they have not yet assessed viewer reaction, and a spokesman for the show would not comment.
See, but that is one of those things where you just don't. Why don't they just put out a comment that just says, like, up yours? Like, you know? Because what have they got to. It's not. I was going to say it's not like they're going to convert them to viewers. That's probably the wrong choice of words. But in other words, it's not like they're losing potential viewers.
No.
It's like, you know, there's guys who are never going to be in your camp. They're just not going to watch now or in the future. So the press release ought to be like, get bent, signed the BBC.
Yeah, just like, well, sorry.
See, when
Move
you first
along.
When I heard the headline, I thought maybe they were just like being, you know, like jackasses about it. But it's a but see, that actually sounds it sounds amusing.
Yeah,
it sounds as though it was sort of a like a wacky left field romp.
Yeah, apparently a number of Muslim groups got mad at Clarkson back in July as well because he made some joke on Top Gear about having seen up a Muslim lady's dress and she was wearing saucy underwear under her burqa. And that annoyed everyone as well. So.
If he actually said saucy underwear, that's especially good. So, people need to lighten up, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. All right. Before we do the top five, we should say that tomorrow, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio. We'll do another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Tomorrow we'll talk about Mr. George Carlin as we wrap up the year. So that is tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Also another installment of Pop Culture Authority. We want to take a moment. Speaking of your laptop and all things electronic, we want to talk about Squires Electric. You can find them at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609 is their phone number. You can also reach them online at SquiresElectric.com. That is SquiresElectric.com. I wonder if they do. They probably don't. I wonder if they do the mounting of televisions. Like if they were just sort of there. Like you might not. Like if you just said, my television needs to be all wired up. And then if they got there and the TV was still sitting on the floor. That Ben guy looks like he could probably. He's a strapping young lad.
He could probably
get a TV mounted on a wall pretty easily.
He probably could.
So it seems like that's the sort of thing that they might. Maybe a value added kind of a thing. Sort of an extra service.
Yeah. You know, I've got like a long table that I usually use on that wall. I might be able to just prop it up on the table.
Oh, please don't do that. I beg of you. I beseech you. Please don't just. Were you suggesting that seriously or as a gag just now? Be honest.
I was semi-serious.
Oh, no, baby, you don't want to do that. You might as well just change your name to Clamp It. You can't just be getting. I don't care whether it was free or not. You can't get a 60-inch television and then just put it up on a couple of coffee cans at the back room of your house. You can't do that.
Was that one of the Jeff Foxworthy things that? That, you know, rednecks, you have one a working TV that's sitting on top of a broken TV?
Well, or as with many of my friends, you know, the TV will be on top of the box that it came in. It's like they'll get the TV and then they'll just get the box and they'll just jam, you know, the box, which is full of, you know, like you get the little styrofoam and whatever, and they'll just fill the box full of crap and then the TV just sits on that like as the. I mean, when you were talking about, you know, guys and, you know, living in these. you know, where it's like the rest of the house is just like made of stuff from the Value Village, you know, where everything costs $10 and yet there's this television that's like the size of a car. I mean, that's how most guys are. And guys don't see any – guys are all about function. You know, they're not so much about the form. And so the television is great because it's big. It's huge. It makes the picture much bigger. The couch just needs to be sturdy enough to hold your ass. And whatever's holding up the TV just needs to be strong enough to hold up the TV. So – but that's not – that's no excuse for you to live that way. You don't want to – you don't want to do that. So maybe just leave the mounting the television part out of the equation if you talk to those guys. Because now are you going to have to do – See, I don't even know.
I have no idea what's going on with this thing. Because he also said that and it's not thin like those other ones. So I'm just like, and we'll have to arrange to get it to you. So I'm just like, how big is this thing anyway?
Well, I would imagine it's probably thicker than like, I mean,
I can't imagine that it's like one of those like sort of rear projection things that it's like.
It's got like the three huge tubes just sitting there.
Well, and those things are like, it's just a freestanding thing that's like 5 feet tall.
Looks like the Captain EO ride.
Yeah.
Well, and here's how lame and old I am. Here's how long it's been since I've purchased a television. So please forgive me because I know this will sound retarded to everybody who lives in like, you know, the present. I can't even ask this because it sounds stupid. This sounds like such an old person question. So is this, does the TV like hook to the internet or something? I mean, is the TV also a computer? Does it require being online?
Well, you have to run the coax cable to
I'm not talking about the cable. I'm talking about like does it hook to the net somehow? Do you need to hook it to the net?
No.
But I'm saying, is that an option? Like if you get a TV, if you were to go buy a flat screen TV now, like some HD TV, does it have, like, is there, I assume that, like, they have refrigerators at Fry's that are hooked to the internet. I swear to God.
Really?
They do. I swear to Christ. At Fry's, they sell refrigerators that are hooked to the internet for reasons that aren't fully explained. But it actually does say it's like internet, you know, Wi-Fi, you know, capable. And I think it's so, I think it is so you can, as you are buying things, if you are, like, scanning them and you put them in the fridge so that it can, like, calculate what's in the fridge and when it goes bad.
Really?
Yeah. That's one of the things that that's what, because I asked the sales guy about it, and it's like as you're putting your groceries in the fridge, there's like a little thing or a, you know, electric eye or something, and you scan the things as you put them in the fridge, like eggs, and then it goes online and it figures out like what they are and when they go bad, or like, you know, if that same item has gone on sale somewhere later, and it's like,
if that's true, that's brilliant.
I've noticed you have Lucerne milk. Are you aware that at the Plaid Pantry they've just lowered the price by a dollar or something? But I swear to God, it seems like a gag, but the refrigerator is actually hooked to the internet, or can be. So maybe it's not such a dumb question. So I wonder if, like, the TV hooks to the internet somehow. Like, maybe is that, or to your Wi-Fi. Like, is maybe that how, like, the TV gets TV guide listings from, like, from out there somewhere. See, it just sounds dumb if I say it out loud, because I have no idea what the practical application of it would be. But there's got to be some, I mean, there's got to be some reason why it might be. So I just have no idea what you're in for with that, is my point.
Yeah, I don't either.
You have a Wi-Fi network at home. So you should be good. So you should be, I mean, one way or the other, you should be fine.
Yeah.
And then you got the Roku thing. So you're gonna be good to go. See, in one fell swoop, you have and totally without cost to you. Look at that. See, so you've, there's some positive karma paying off somewhere because you have just you really in the space of like 1 week, you've upgraded your entire home entertainment system.
I can't afford to buy food or put gas in my car or pay Patrick's medical bills, but I have an enormous television.
But that's what I'm saying. As you were, you know, but when you're sitting at home, when you were sitting at home, jobless and carless, you know, and just listening to the rasping sounds of the ventilator running beside you, you'll be able to watch, you know, like all of Degrassi, The Next Generation or something. So
that's nice.
SquiresElectric.com. They can help you with all your home wiring needs and all of your office wiring needs as well as you head into the new year. Write this number down. It is 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. That is how you contact them. SquiresElectric.com. They have been in Portland for over a decade and they're fine folks. They wired the Emerson News Network studios and those work flawlessly. So good enough for us, good enough for y'all. My friends, 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. I have placed in the Dropbox the top five. Are you ready to go with that?
I have them right here.
All right, ladies and gentle folk.
5, 4, 3. 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful.
for counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
By the way, somebody says that internet-enabled TVs have been available for quite some time. Now we're on to 3D television. You are old. Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. That's great.
So there's no honorable mention here.
You know, no. Because I had put together a list of... I had put together a list of songs, and I went through and I was, you know, sort of ordering them, and I got to the top five, and then I looked at the remaining songs, and I said, honorable mention, and really, to be honest, because I started with, you know, as you sometimes do with a list where you don't necessarily know going in what's going to be on it, I started with every song that fell into the category of songs about Superman.
Right.
And just most of the other ones were just either not actually about Superman, except for, like, a stray reference, or they were just terrible.
Okay.
There were a couple that, you know, were about Superman, but they were just awful. They were irredeemable in every way.
Or they're like bad Leroy Brown, where it's just an offhand reference.
That's what I'm saying. It's
Superman.
Like, you know, that's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about. Now, it doesn't have to be, like, the entire song doesn't have to be about Superman as such, but if they use him as an actual point of reference, you know, like more than once or more than passingly, as I think they just,
A central figure in the song.
And I think you're thinking of You Don't Mess Around with Jim, not Bad Leroy Brown. You don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit
in
the wind.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, You Don't Mess Around.
So that song, not about Superman. So But if they use him as a central point of reference, then it was granted. But there just weren't more than five. Sometimes there are only five songs, Don.
Interesting. He refers to, Jim Croce referred to Superman in You Don't Mess Around with Jim, and then referenced The Lone Ranger. In Bad Leroy Brown.
No, you're also thinking of You Don't Mess Around with Jim, but thanks for playing. I'll just let you puzzle that out yourself.
Okay.
You don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull the old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim.
It is the same song. Okay, never mind. Apparently I'm conflating my croachies.
Okay.
Okay. Number five on the top five here is R.E.M., I Am Superman.
Like a less interesting Capturing the Freedmans. I'm sorry, what? Yes, number five.
R.E.M., I Am Superman.
Yeah, my brain is like cheesecloth today. So this is R.E.M., I Am Superman, a song that Michael Stipe hates, by the way. Had to be convinced to record it by everybody else. The other guys in the band loved it because it's a cover. It's not an R.E.M. song. It's originally by the Clicks, but this is the version everybody knows. That led to an interesting sort of misunderstanding a couple of years ago when this song, the original Clicks version, was used to advertise... I don't know, it's escaping me. It's like something, it was popsicles or something. And so they used the original version of this song, and then R.E.M. fans everywhere were outraged and calling them sellouts, and Michael Stipe was at great pains to point out on their blog that they actually, you know, they had nothing to say about it because, again, it's not their song, it's a cover. But... the other guys in the band were really big fans of this, and they talked Michael Stipe into recording it, and it became a pretty prominent part of their catalog, especially because I don't think... Let me ask you this right now.
It was IBM, apparently.
Okay, so IBM, they used the Clicks version, and everybody thought it was, you know, somebody was covering the R.E.M. song. Let me ask you this, though. I can't think of anything else that R.E.M. has done that is a cover, that's a cover song. I can't think of...
Not off the top of my head. I'm sure there must be.
They covered Dragging the Line by Tommy James and the Shondells, but that wasn't even on a record. That was like on a collection or something. I think this actually came out on an R.E.M. album. I could be wrong about that. It might have been the flip side of a single. You really do get the sense when you listen to some of their records how much there is R.E.M., which is Michael Stipe and the other guys, and then there are the other guys who function as a collective, you know, apart from him, because they've recorded a lot of songs without Michael Stipe just as being, you know, backing bands for other artists.
Apparently R.E.M. actually covered a number of songs. They covered the Velvet Underground's After Hours. They covered Academy Fight Song from Mission of Burma. They covered Neil Young's Ambulance Blues. They covered a Robin Hitchcock song called Arms of Love.
So are these all... But, I mean, these aren't on... but these aren't, like, on R.E.M. albums, though. I mean, they're sort of, like, for tribute albums.
Yeah, I think these are, like... A lot of these are bootlegs.
They covered First We Take Manhattan. by Leonard Cohen too. That was on the I'm Your Fan record. They did that. Yeah, so I guess they've done more than I'm really thinking of.
They've done a couple of different Velvet Underground songs. They did. They covered Lou Reed's Femme Fatale on Dead Letter Office.
You know, the Velvet Underground. Ah, never mind. That's a whole separate discussion. These are the top five songs about Superman. Don Taylor.
Number four would be. Five for Fighting,
yes.
Superman.
Now, this is a song that everybody reflexively, you know, groans at and, you know, and dislikes. But, you know, I think that's solely because it got shoved on us after 9/11. It was that thing that they just played over and over and over again. And it's a perfectly fine song. There's nothing wrong with it.
I actually happen to love this song.
Yeah, it's not the song's fault that it got juxtaposed with a lot of images of eagles on YouTube videos after 9/11 happened.
I'm just out to find the better part of me.
Here's the thing about this song. I forget who we said this about recently, but it was one of those songs that you heard it and you loved it, but then you immediately knew that it was so singular that the guy was going to have just a hell of a time overcoming it.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's like, what could you write that is as distinctive as this, if this is your lead single? This is an obvious point, but one of the really great production notes on this song is that I don't know if the song was written this way or if they figured this out during the recording and arrangement process, but it's that the arrangement actually picks up and increases in tempo, and I think almost as a key change on the line up, up, and away. So as he says up, up, and away, that's when the song itself actually lifts in terms of tempo and, you know, and in sort of the, you know, the fullness and the volume right here. And then they have that that ascending orchestral line in the background. Here's a fundamental truth. It's that Batman is, you know, if you consider Batman a superhero, which I know some people do not, Batman is a better superhero than Superman. But in terms of the actual characters as they exist in the comic books, Batman is far more interesting than Superman because Superman, you know, because he's a hero, but Batman is crazy, which is the thing that makes him compelling. But in terms of, like, cultural and sociological and philosophical and psychological significance and symbolism, Superman is far and away more interesting. Because that's the thing is, you take him out of the comic books and you put him in the realm of symbolism, and Batman becomes infinitely less interesting because he is just a guy. He's a guy with a lot of money. Whereas Superman is like an externalization of all of the different parts of man's psyche.
But one of my favorite comic books that I read in, like, the last 5 years or so was a book that was about Lex Luthor, and it was from the perspective of Lex Luthor as hero, a man who's saying, look, this alien has come here, this impenetrable, unkillable alien, and he's telling us all what to do, and he's just basically appointed himself cop of the world, and this isn't right. And Lex Luthor seeing himself as someone who is fighting for the freedom of people who are, like, being threatened by and oppressed by this alien, this space alien who has come and basically appointed him protector of all of us.
Was it a book or was it a story or
It was like a standalone comic book.
I love stuff like
it
that.
It wasn't graphic novel length, but
That's fantastic. It's like I read this. There was a long, long article I read on the internet some time ago, and it was somebody really put a lot of thought and time into it about how the Empire were actually the heroes of the Star Wars saga, not the Rebellion, because they said that they pointed out that the Rebellion was trying to institute a theocracy, and they said that the Empire was a secular form of government, and that there was in fact a tiered system of leadership, and that there was one ruler at the top of it, but that the only thing that made Darth Vader a villain was that he in fact was trying to return religion to government, and that the Empire was operating according to rational law as opposed to superstitious law. That's before the whole business with the midichlorians and everything. But these are the top five songs about Superman. Don Taylor,
number three, The Spin Doctors, Jimmy Olsen's Blues.
And I know it pains me to put The Spin Doctors this high in any kind of list ever. under any circumstances. But this is great because it's like it's shades of what you were just talking about. It is the story of Superman from the perspective of the guy who constantly loses the girl to, you know, a super-powered, unkillable, impenetrable alien, as you just described him. So, I mean, it gets points for concept alone.
And, you know, I liked the Spin Doctors a lot. I really did. They weren't a band that I felt the need to, like, stay with and follow and keep buying their other albums, me and pretty much the rest of America.
Right.
But, you know, when they hit, that first album that really hit big and stuff, they're enjoyable.
I was a fan of that Two Princes song, I'll say that.
Yeah, I really like that song.
I liked that song a lot. They're a little too funk for me. Mm. It's that whole bow, bow, bow thing on the bass, the weird rubber bandy bass sound. I can't get with that. But they wrote some nice pop songs.
My problem is the self-consciously folksy way he has of singing. It's got that, and plus that little scraggly like soul patch thing that he had going on. Those two things just really turned me on.
You'll be happy to know that God punished him by paralyzing his vocal cords. Probably because you disliked him.
Yes, that's why.
What other powers do you have, Don? So I like the idea that that Jimmy Olsen is just like that. He's sitting there just all pissed off about the fact that like, well, you know, like I. You know, I'm free tonight, and you know, you're free tonight. Maybe we could go out and we could do a thing. And then, like, Superman suddenly appears after saving the world, and that there's just nothing. I mean, how can you possibly compete with that? So it's, and that he ends the choruses by saying, "But I've got a pocket full of kryptonite," which is either figurative or quite possibly literal, adding this sort of great sinister twist to the song.
Did you ever see the Saturday Night Live sketch with The Rock playing Superman?
No.
Clark Kent. Have to check that out at some point. It's basically the idea of the sketch was that everyone that Clark Kent works with knows he's Superman. And they think it's idiotic that he thinks that
and
he's still fooling them. And so they start saying these really horrible, like these terrible things. You know, I saw Superman in a men's restroom just picking up some guys. Yeah, so, and The Rock as Clark Kent going, "That's not true!" Like, no, really, I saw it. He hangs. It's the men's room down by the park.
That's fantastic. These are the top five songs about Superman. Don Taylor, what is number two?
Number two, The Kinks, "Wish I Could Fly Like Superman."
This is a great song, especially because as the, you know, The Kinks, who kind of, you know, made their name, obviously, with the loud, very power chord-oriented rock, you know, like All Day and All of the Night, You Really Got Me. And as they got older, The Kinks, Ray Davis especially, started to write a lot more about, experimented with a lot of different musical styles and started to write a lot more about social themes and social injustice and, you know, especially the sort of crippling economic crisis that that Britain was going through. And this is a really, really great song, and it's all about basically just living in crushing poverty, and just growing up in a tenement, essentially, growing up in council housing where it's just, you know, where you're dead broke and there's garbage piled up in the streets because London was going through a garbage strike at that same time, and there was just filth everywhere and rats running loose through all the neighborhoods, and how if he were Superman, he wouldn't have any of these problems, but of course he's not. He's just some guy, and so he's stuck in this horrible neighborhood with a government that will not help him. I love The Kinks, and it's really telling. It's indicative of what a badass Ray Davis is, that even when they're doing what is essentially a disco song, he still sounds like a badass.
Yeah. Did you ever see him on the VH1 Storytellers?
No.
It was really, really interesting. He was one of the better ones of those, where just sitting there telling the stories behind the songs, and really worth going back and finding and checking out.
These are the top five songs about Superman. Don Taylor, what is number one?
Number one is The Crash Test Dummies, Superman song.
And you know this song.
I do.
What a great song. In fact, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this. I'm going to wrap up the show, and then I'll actually start the song then, because I want to sort of let it play without, because the song is more important than I.
And it is a great song.
Narrator. It's a beautiful song. And talking about your first single, I mean, that was like the first song, the song that band ever put out. What's his name? Brad... Brad Roberts, I think his name is, the guy with the and everybody thinks of him as the guy with the really low voice. And in fact, he has like a colossal range because he did a couple songs in a falsetto too. But that was his first single. He's like, look, here's my first song for you. And he just, you know, and it's just like have you ever seen the video for Superman song?
Yes.
Where it's got like, you know, it has funeral. I mean, and he's up and he's performing the song as a, as a eulogy. You know, and then there's like Wonder Woman who's showing up and she's elderly and it's just like, it just kills you. It's just a heartbreaker. It's beautiful though, but we'll play this in just a second. So we want to say that coming up tomorrow on the show, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here with Humor Me Comedy 101, his year-end edition about George Carlin and so forth. Plus, we'll have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. So that is all on the way. Tomorrow, after a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer, Bruce Agler. Chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you, so we thank you kindly for that. It is Thursday, December 30th, 2010, and that is the frequency. Kenneth, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now. This is the Crash Test Dummies and Superman song.
Tarzan wasn't a ladies' man. He'd just come along and scoop him up under his arm like that. Quick as a cat in the jungle. But Clark Kent, now there was a real gent. He would not be caught sitting around in no jungle scheme, dumb as an ape doing nothing. Superman never made any money saving the world from Solomon Grundy. Sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Hey Bob, Sue had a straight job. Even though he could have smashed through any bank in the United States, where he had the strength, but he would not. Folks said his family were all dead. Planet crumbled, but Superman, he forced himself to carry on. Forget Krypton and keep going. Superman never made any money. Saving the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Tarzan was king of the jungle and lord over all the a string together for words. I toss in Eugene. Sometimes when Sue was stopping crimes, I'll bet that he was tempted to just quit and turn his back on man. Join Tarzan in the forest. But he stayed in the city, kept on changing clothes and dirty old phone booths till his work was through. Then nothing to do. Superman never made despair, the world will never see another man like him. And sometimes I despair, the world will never see another man like him.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.